I call this meeting to order and ask you to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Chalk, I'm here. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Clairborn has asked to be excused. Mr. Croto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Present.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Here.
14 members present.
And petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. We have no special orders of the day, so we'll move to privilege of the floor for the public. We have three people signed up in advance, and then others can speak if they wish. We'll start with Mike Lane from Dryden. Welcome, Mike.
Good afternoon, folks. Mike Lane from Dryden. Having served on the legislature, I have a great deal of respect and affection for county government. I've watched what you've done here, and it won't come as any surprise when I tell you I don't think you always do everything right. However, we'll talk about that another time. Tonight I want to talk about something that you do right, and I think you set a wonderful example for the other municipalities in Tompkins County, and I'm talking about the villages, the towns, and the school districts. And that is your budget process. And particularly in the budget process, talking about the real increase in taxation, which is a function of the tax levy, and not talking about the tax rate increase, which can vary up and down. I've been just appalled watching some of the towns and most recently the villages produce their budgets with huge increases in the tax levies. Dryden Village, the tax levy increase was 8.75%. I read in the paper that the Groton Village's increase was 14% on the tax levy, an amount that, to me, is unconscionable. Same problem in the towns. Dryden Town is up. I can't tell the exact figure. Count of Ithaca is notorious for that. And it's what happens is the backdoor tax rate increases, where they soak up the increase in assessment from the reassessment countywide, and then just pretend that that's just an extra booty of money that the towns and villages get. To its credit, some of the school districts are talking about the levy, including the Dryden School District. I'd like to thank you. I know your budget process is continuing, but you set the example of talking about the levy. Last year you set a cap on approximately how high the levy would go. That's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for people to watch their local government do. And when the budget hearings come in, they know what money is actually being raised, not the fictitious tax rate. So that's a good thing you do. Please do it. And when you go back to your towns and villages, and I know you folks report to them on a regular basis, and the school districts, please talk about what you do and tell them why it's so important that they talk about the tax levy and not the tax rate increase. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. We next have Bethany Schroeder from Trumansburg Road.
Delivered my comments to your record. Thank you for listening to me today. My name is Bethany Schroeder. I represent the Ithaca Health Alliance as well as the people we serve at the Ithaca Free Clinic. In my reports to you throughout this quarter, I shared that visits to the Free Clinic amounted to about 175 per month. Volunteers and staff have suspected that visits might increase as the national economic downturn brought changes to the communities of our region. In fact, during the month of March, we counted more than 220 clinic visits, with an additional 50 visits from local veterans, and their families whose services are not included in our clinic census. We have been able to accommodate the increased visits because clinic physicians have agreed to see more patients each shift and because we have successfully recruited additional clinicians in the complementary and ancillary fields, thereby offering more alternatives to conventional care. Volunteers work in cramped space, and patients continue to wait in every available hallway of the Health Alliance suite. The biggest concern many of us have is that between 8 and 10 people are routinely turned away without any service each session because our capacity has been met and extended and met again. Our patients also tell us about their loss of work hours, jobs, insurance benefits, homes, and help in managing their families. Many more of our patients had medical care but can no longer get it because they cannot pay for it. These patients frequently have chronic conditions, have no current access to much-needed medication and equipment, and are all too aware that they will only cost the healthcare system more as a result of their unintended self-neglect. In recent months, the Alliance was fortunate to receive a donation earmarked for subsidized Health Alliance memberships. We have put this windfall to good use with our clinic visitors when testing, treatment, and even surgery at the hospital are required. You see, in special circumstances, Alliance grants and loans pay for part of a member's care. So we know that these patients identified at the clinic with no insurance or inadequate insurance can sometimes get care that our members help to support. Having spent more than a year reaching out to the human services professionals in the area, we now have many more resources about which to teach our patients. Nonetheless, these systems are also increasingly strained, and we imperil the weaker among us by relying too heavily on an already fragile network of support. In the next months, the Health Alliance will return to this body of leaders periodically to offer updates, news, whether good or bad, and more anecdotal information about clinic visitors. In the meantime, a visit from the county leadership, perhaps from among the members of the Health Committee, would be welcome. Then you can see for yourselves the reduced circumstances of a small but growing and important group of your constituents. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Bethany. Next we have Vonnie Dawson. And after Vonnie, if anyone wishes to speak, you can please come to the mic as well.
I'm here tonight because my granddaughter is still in foster care. Her name is Rhiannon Dawson, and this is a picture of her. She's 4 years old. She's been in foster care now for over a year. I'm going to give you each a file, and I'd like for you to take some time after you leave here, if you have some time, and review the file. Keep the file. I'll be at every board meeting until she's out of foster care updating you. I've requested to have placement of Rhiannon, and it took the agency, Tompkins County DSS, a long time to respond to my letter. I finally got a letter back stating that I needed to see a psychologist, get an evaluation, get recommendations, and then prove that I met those recommendations. There's been a report on file from a psychologist for a long time now that Tompkins County has totally ignored. I had a psychologist at the courthouse for 2 days to testify in court. That was totally ignored. You read the documents, you'll see. My daughter has joint custody of her 2-year-old son, Rhiannon's brother. She just had him for 9 days. She can have joint custody of one child, but the other child still remains in foster care. Rhiannon was just replaced with another lady this week. This is her fourth placement in a year. Rhiannon's classmates ask her what her living situation is. At 4 years old, she says to her, it's just too complicated to explain to you. You wouldn't understand. And that's pretty sad coming out of a 4-year-old. And I'll tell you, most of you would not want your grandkids placed in the places where Rhiannon has been placed. And I'm not even going to get into that. It's a very sad situation. She's now living down on 4th Street. Every time I come forward and say anything, Michelle and Rhiannon are punished because inside social services, they remove Michelle's visitation rights, saying that they don't have anyone to supervise the visitation or anything like that. and then her visitation rates get cut back. This is what her attorney tells me. They punish Rhiannon and Michelle. Every time I come forward, I have two of the judges under judicial review, Judge Raleigh, Judge Ames. You'll see my complaint against them inside the file. I don't know what else to do. I mean, I've contacted everybody I can contact. I've contacted the governor. He sent it back to New York State DSS. New York State DSS is involved. But as board members, you guys can put the pressure on Tompkins County because they're the people that report to the judges. And it all started with Sandra Aloy and her brother and my daughter, Crystal, doing sexual favors for him to get Alana out of my house. And that's the God's honest truth. There was never any neglect, imminent danger, or anything. I had custody of Alana. My daughter, Crystal, couldn't get Alana back in the court. And she got Sandra Aloy to come in and take all three of the kids out of my house. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Vonnie. Does anyone else wish to speak under privilege of the floor for the public?
Yes, good evening. I'm Bruce Estes of the editor of the Ithaca Journal. I was here a few months ago to talk to you about an issue that you're going to address tonight, at least is that I read recently in the journal, that you would be taking up a resolution regarding caucus meetings and when it is appropriate to do that. I do have a handout for you. It's an email that I had sent to the committee chair that handled this matter. My understanding is that the resolution that you are going to be considering tonight would be to seek assistance from the esteemed New York State Legislature on how to run Tompkins County's government. And I wanted to offer a few ideas to that may allow you to move more quickly towards a solution. There is already an open meetings law in New York that outlines a number of areas when legislative bodies might meet in a closed session. The issue before you, I think, is when members of a caucus could meet in closed session to review the public's business, to discuss matters, to discuss legislation, to discuss matters that will come before the larger body. In Tompkins County, as you know, there's an unusual situation because of the imbalance of the legislative body. There are 11 Democrats and 4 Republicans. That supermajority of Democrats could allow legislation to be discussed behind closed doors to allow all that discussion to occur outside of the view of the public, and then for legislators to return to a session without having additional conversations before the public and then go ahead and pass legislation. That short-circuits the public's right to be involved with their local government. Now, I know that there are times when bodies must meet in confidence and in private to discuss some matters. There are a number of areas where this is a very good idea, and I'd like to outline the ones that New York acknowledges and I think most reasonable media outlets also acknowledge and most good government groups acknowledge as being necessary for good government to occur. Those areas of which it is perfectly permissible for a body to meet in closed executive session once they take a vote include matters which imperil the public safety if disclosed. Any matter that may disclose the identity of a law enforcement agent or informer, information relating to the current or future investigation or prosecution of a criminal offense, which would imperil the effect of law enforcement if disclosed. 4, discussions regarding proposed or pending or current litigation. 5, collective negotiations pursuant to Article 14 of the Civil Service Law. 6, the medical, financial, credit, or employment history of a particular person or corporation, or matters leading to the appointment, employment, promotion, demotion, discipline, suspension, dismissal, or removal of a particular person or corporation. 7, the preparation, grading, or administration of examinations. And finally, the proposed acquisition or sale or lease of real property or the proposed acquisition of securities, sales, exchange of securities held by such public bodies, but only when publicity would substantially affect the value of those securities. Those are very good guidelines, and I think that you do have before you good guidance from the state legislature already on this point. So I would urge you to review those and to consider whether or not you even need to ask for additional guidelines, since those have already been given to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Anyone else wish to speak under privilege of the floor for the public? If not, we'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators, and we'll start with Tyke Randall.
This is probably the greatest part of being a legislator, is to get to do this kind of thing. This time around, honestly, we had some good candidates. And the interview process was awesome. I got to go out into the community and talk to a lot of students. And it's really neat to see what they're doing in the community behind the scenes. A lot of that stuff, coming from a small town, you kind of take that for granted sometimes. And I'll tell you, if you want to feel your roots and get back to what it's about to be a public servant, just go visit some of the youth, like such as Peter Jackson here, and see what they're doing out there to make a difference in the communities that they live in. I think I'll start by, I first introduced Peter, the Distinguished Youth Award winner for this month, and I'd also like to introduce Dr. Brenda Myers, who's the district superintendent for Groton, who nominated Peter. She has a couple things to say.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here on behalf of Groton Central School Board, administration, faculty, staff, and students. It's a great honor, and we appreciate you taking the time to recognize the amazing youth that are making a difference every day. I'll tell you a little bit about Peter. I've watched Peter over the last few years in high school. I was just kidding with his mom that we might not let him graduate this year. I'm talking to his teachers if there's something we could do. Over the 4 years, you've watched him multi-talented. He's strong in academics, leadership on student council, as well as engaged in our arts program and a key part of our athletic program, as well as a three varsity sport. He also gives to all of us a sense of hope and understanding. If you ever watch his leadership, it is a quiet style, always full of hope. Whenever I'd say to him before a game, "What do you think?" He's like, "We got this one." He was always ready. He would take control whenever it was needed. And what you find is he is just a very responsive young man with an enormous heart. At Groton Central School, our mission is to encourage, enable, and expect excellence. And Peter lives that mission for us every day. We couldn't be prouder.
And I'm glad you mentioned the heart thing. I've had the honor of knowing Peter and his family pretty much my whole life. The grandparents are here, and the parents of Peter and Bridget and Arlen and Sharon Jackson. I'll tell you, he's got good, solid roots, and I know where it comes from because we have a special family here tonight as well. So a few things. I just want to touch on some of the things that he's been actively involved in. I've seen him probably most on the athletic field. He plays ball with my son. I've seen him go from Little League on up to varsity sports. He always, always, always plays with a huge heart. Not only is he dedicated to the sport, but he also is dedicated to his teammates as well. Some of the things that make Peter special. TAP, teaching about peer pressure. Peter is actively involved in this program aimed at teaching middle school students in local schools about the effects of drug and alcohol use and other peer-influenced behaviors. He's currently working on a workout video, and this is aimed at kids from the ages of kindergarten to fifth grade to address the concern of lack of physical exercise. I have talked to him about this a little bit. We're going to put one together for legislators probably afterwards. Hats for Humanity. As a member of student council, Peter and others have raised money donated to charities such as the Muscular Dystrophy Foundation, Biddy Basketball, Pee Wee Football, and baseball clinics. These are school outside the school realm, volunteer services where he's introduced him and this and other students have introduced the younger generation to those sports and the advantages of playing sports and what it means to be a team. Friendship donations, food giveaways. In the past, my wife and I ran a food giveaway for a couple years. Peter was always there on weekends to help. He was in high demand with the older ladies. They'd love to have him carry their groceries out to the car. Team captain for football, baseball, and basketball. Tri-M, he's a member of the Music Honor Society, where he volunteered to help set up events to raise money for music program and other charitable agencies. And I think one that I found that I didn't know about until I interviewed him, he was just awarded the Samuel Nelson Scholarship. And what that is, it's he's going to attend Hartwick College in the fall. And I thought the scholarship and what it was about absolutely epitomized what he's about and why we give this award. And it's a $32,000 scholarship, and it recognizes students of character, those who have demonstrated strong personal qualities through leadership and school and community involvement. I thought that was very telling of why he's here and why he deserves this award. He has a few things to say. Go ahead.
I would like to start off by saying it is a great honor to be receiving the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. I feel that helping out and being a leader slash role model in the town of Groton is very important. For the past 2 years, I have been a peer educator in a program called TAP, teaching about peer pressure. As a peer educator, I help to teach young middle school students about the negative effects of drugs and alcohol. My fellow peer educators and I try to teach the kids through different workshops. The workshops help the kids come up with different ways they can say no if being pressured into drinking or doing drugs. Sorry. If the kids have any questions about high school life, we can tell them firsthand. I have answered many questions like, are the kids mean in high school or are the teachers mean? If we can help the kids to have the strength and knowledge to be able to say no when they are put in tough situations of peer pressure, then our job has been fulfilled. The TAP program helps the kids learn how to say no in different scenarios of the workshops. Being a role model to the kids and showing them that they have to, that they don't have to drink or do drugs to be popular is very important to me. Near Christmas, I was selected to sing at the senior citizens' home. There were about 8 students total that went down to sing Christmas carols to the elderly. We spent half the afternoon singing. The senior citizens' faces were priceless when my fellow students and I were singing. It made me happy that they enjoyed it as much as I did. This February, I helped make a workout video, as Tyke was saying. It's going to be going out for our elementary school. The kids weren't getting enough physical education time, so the athletic director came up with a solution. The solution was a workout video in which students could conduct stretches and different agility workouts that could get their heart rates to increase. The workout video is going to be in every elementary classroom in Groton's next school year. I was just accepted into Tri-M, which is a musical honor society. For the past 4 years, I've been in student council. I've helped Mrs. Hunter, the advisor, with packing up the cans of food for the food pantry that we raised in school. We take the food down to the pantry after we're finished packing. This year, I was elected to be class treasurer of the 12th grade. I plan on attending Hartwick College in the fall, and I received a $32,000 Samuel Nelson scholarship from Hartwick, as he kind of said before me. But the scholarship is given to the students who have demonstrated strong personal qualities through leadership in school and community involvement, and those who exhibit the potential to succeed academically. I'd like to finish by saying thank you for making me the Distinguished Youth of Tompkins County. It is a great honor to represent the town of Groton and also Tompkins County.
I'd like to present this award. It's Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award presented to Peter Jackson in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, April 2009, sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Cuga Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Awards and Engraving.
Thank you, Lucy. I also have a box of goodies for you.
I'd like to say one more thing. It's kind of neat. You can tell when a night is going to be special. You find out how much you've been blessed and when it all comes together. I went down to meet Peter and his family down in the courtroom, or down in the front lobby, and I witnessed, they came through the scanner, and right away Tim Little was there. He goes, "I know who you are," and it was kind of neat. I didn't know where he was going with us, but the next thing I knew, I found out that, you know, I don't know if Tim's son plays basketball, I'm not sure, but he knew Peter from his playing days on the basketball court, and his comment to him was, and he didn't know anything about this Distinguished Youth Award thing, but his comment to him was that he always played with heart, he always played with dignity. He said guys would cheap shot him sometimes. He always pulled his head up, never let that get him down, and went on with the game and was always a gentleman. And I thought, you know, this is just right. This kid absolutely deserves something like this, and I'm proud of him. So, thank you.
Congratulations. Are there any other legislators who wish to speak under privilege of the floor? Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. This is about Earth Day. There's an event in T-Bird on April 23rd from 3 to 5, organized by Carissa Parlato. She has roughly 150 to 200 high school kids, and they're going to be meeting in front of the high school and also in the downtown village by the Kids Village, and they will be involved on Thursday the 23rd, picking up trash, planting trees, sorting recyclables, mulch spreading, and flower planting. And if they get rained out, they're going to meet on the 30th. So I bring that to your attention, and I'm sure many other people want to talk about Earth Day, too.
Thank you, Jim. Any others? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a word to thank. We're going to be addressing tonight the tourism... four different grants programs, and they're on the consent agenda. You never know to hear whether things will be taken off, but in case we don't have an opportunity to do so later, I just wanted to thank the many panelists and staff people from multiple organizations in our own county who spent countless hours reviewing, you know, stacks this high when you add them up from the four different programs of grant applications to what are, you know, four different programs that address a real cross-section of activities across the county related to presenting our community to visitors while maintaining high standards in serving our current residents as well. And these include the arts and cultural organizational grants that are meant for organizations that have achieved that had already achieved a certain level of organization and ability to attract visitors from a regional area. That are of a sort of a size and a stature to be able to do that. The project grants, the new tourism grants, and the celebrations awards. And those each of those programs are designed to come in with a particular to a particular type of organization, whether it's been around 3 years or less than 3 years or of a certain size, or just as we address them, people should realize that they are each meant to address certain needs, and that dozens of people have participated in helping us to evaluate those already, and my thanks go out to all of them. Brett Bossard is here. tonight to answer questions, I guess, if we need them later, and to you and the rest of the people on the various panels, thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of items under consumer alert. The first is those of you that have had a chance to listen to the news on credit cards and the unconscionable raising of interest rates. When you get those little flyers in the mail that say we've made a change to your credit card agreement, and if you're like me, your glasses aren't good enough, you actually need a magnifying glass to read the fine print. But check those out carefully, because interest rates are going over 27% on some of these adjustments. It's with that in mind that I want to mention one of my favorite topics, New York State Electric and Gas. I received my set of bills here in the last couple of weeks and noticed that the timing had changed on the repayment, the amount of time you have to pay without penalty. It actually appears that they've shortened the time by at least a week or 10 days. I urge you all to check your NYSEG bills. To some it may not be a major item, but to a lot of us it is a major item, because it's another way of shortening the time period that you have to pay the bill, but certainly they're not shy about adding a late charge. And it's sort of a left-handed way of batting the consumer. But I have even a better one, and this involves the telephone companies. The only one I can refer to directly right now is Frontier, because that's the phone company I have at my home. A new procedure that Frontier has instituted is not to send you a copy of your long-distance telephone calls. And I have one of those plans. This shouldn't surprise you anymore, but I have one of those plans that puts my DSL on in the package. Well, in an effort to them to save money, they are not producing the long-distance pages that if you have so many minutes that you're allotted, so that you can identify what calls you've made. Well, why this is a concern for me, and it should be for you, one is I like to know that there's verification of the calls that I've made, because I've found in the past that sometimes calls appear on there that I've never made, and sometimes you have to go back and clarify it. Believe it or not, that's almost incidental. But here's the hooker. Remember the years, and I continue even now to talk about the universal fund and that fee that's on your phone bill that can be anywhere from a buck or two to $6 or $7. That is related directly to, that fee is a factor of the long-distance calls you make. Now, if you're not permitted to verify what calls you've made, when you pay that portion of your bill, it's a crapshoot. You don't know if it's accurate or not. You don't know if you're being billed for something that you don't have access to at all. And I intend, with Karen's help, of course, to go after this at the federal level, because that fund is set up by the feds. The phone companies are permitted to charge us and our constituents a fee to recapture what they have to pay to set aside that money. And if you don't have the opportunity to verify what's on that bill, you're being billed without any backup data. And I'm careful to say I only know that this is happening with Frontier Communications. Those of you that have Verizon or AT&T, I also don't know if it's happening on cell phones. This is landline telephones. If any of you have alternative phone companies and can take a look at the bill, please verify whether or not you're getting verification of the long-distance calls. It's of particular interest if you buy a package, as I do, that includes your computer and whatnot. If you just have the landline, it may not apply to you. But it would be interesting if any of you have a computer set up that you've received DSL through another phone company. I'd certainly like to hear about it because I know this is happening with Frontier. I know I tease Jim a lot about NYSEG. This is a serious matter because of the, remember, they collect $6 billion a year nationally in the Universal Fund. And a lot of the programs that we're trying to get funded, and I go back to Steve Witcher's days, we were trying to get some of this money to help us fund the communications towers. And we're still trying to get them to expand that to include broadband, because we need legislation at the federal level to include broadband under the Universal Fund so we can gain access to it. We continue that battle, and Senator Schumer has been very, very, he's been a great guy to work with because he's very interested in this. Anyway, that's my spiel for the day.
Thank you, Frank. I have Nathan next.
Yeah, I was at an Air Service Board meeting yesterday, and Congressman Arcuri came right before then to talk about the $416,000 or so dollars for a snow plow, which covers 95% of the cost of a snow plow for the airport. And one of the interesting things that he brought up and that other members of the Air Service Board brought up is that with the New York Jets coming to Cortland, there's an opportunity for the for our airport to take advantage of that. Already, Teganic Aviation believes that they're going to get an uptick of corporate jets and whatnot. And so, hopefully, maybe we can get some of those fans to come through through our own airport. Other interesting things is that our employment numbers for March are up 20% from last year, and also our fares are about the same or better than for almost all destinations, except for like New York City, I believe, as Syracuse. And Syracuse, by the way, has already seen a downturn in the number of employments over there. So good news for the Air Service Board and for our own airport. Also, I had a few other updates. The Greater Ithaca Activity Center and Multicultural Resource Center is having their annual meeting at 5:30 next Thursday, April 30th. And the speaker will be Professor Sean Everly Bradswell, who will be doing a speech called The Audacity of Work. And so definitely check that out. Text message bans. I heard that there was a text message bans while driving. I heard that the Public Safety Committee had a very interesting discussion about this yesterday, with a lot of discussion about enforcement and whatnot. And I hope that Public Safety will take it up again next month, because I'll be working with Jonathan on looking at the laws that exist out there in Onondaga and other places and trying to expand that to internet searches and downloading. Let's see. Finally, there was one more thing, and I completely lost what it was. Oh, the Government Office of Regulatory Reform. So apparently the Government Office of Regulatory Reform has been looking at the truck regulations. They apparently sent their analysis of the regulations to the State Department of Transportation on April 2nd. And so now it's in DOT's hands, and DOT is looking at it. Gore asked DOT to improve its regulatory draft impact statement and also to look at its cost-benefit analysis. But it appears so far that there's not any real substantive changes, but we don't know that, of course, until we actually see it. But I know Pam is as part of the Upstate Safety Task Force, is actually going to be going to a meeting on Thursday. Well, they'll probably discuss this in greater detail. So that's all.
Thank you, Nathan. Before I go to people who have asked to speak twice, Martha is next.
Yes, about the airport, and a 20% increase, every other airline seems to be dropping. And I just want to say that since my mom lives in California, I know that Northwest run pretty well, and it's fantastic. You know, one hop to Detroit and then to the West Coast, so I appreciate that. I wanted to, on behalf of the task force that's looking into indigent defense, I just want to announce a meeting that is going to be, we've been having a series of speakers come in from other counties and as well as people in Tompkins County's criminal justice system talk to the task force. A fairly special speaker will be on May 12th, Jonathan Gratis. He's the executive director of the New York State Defenders Association, Public Defenders Association, and high-level person. This is a nonprofit that's been providing support to New York's criminal defense community since 1967. Its mission is to improve the quality and scope of publicly supported legal representation to low-income people. So it's and he's really in touch with what's happening at the state level, which could be very significant. There's a proposal that the state take over all indigent defense as a statewide system, I think the idea being to provide consistency statewide. Of course, we're pretty sure that doesn't mean they're going to pay for it. So, but it should be very interesting for people to hear them, and anybody is invited. It'll be May 12th, 5 to 7, at the Old Courthouse, and go and enter at the back door by DeWitt Park. He'll be speaking about the future of indigent defense services in New York.
Thank you, Martha. Anyone else wish to speak in the privilege? Carol?
Yeah, I had the privilege of giving the liaison report from this body to the Ithaca Town Board meeting this last month. And they had some high-profile items on their agenda, and I expected to arrive and patiently wait through their public section of the floor, as the town of Ithaca representative had done through our lengthy beginning of our meeting last month. I had another meeting to get to, and I was pleasantly surprised to arrive and find out that their agenda calls for having the report from the municipal officials first, on their agenda before, I guess it was after the roll call of members and the very initial items. And I promised them, as I apologized to their representative who had waited here for an hour and a half before finally needing to get to her next meeting, I thought that was a very good idea, and that I would bring back to this body the notion that we might be able to consider affording other municipal officials that same courtesy. Our agenda, I believe the order of it may be prescribed in our bylaws. I know that the chair has some discretion. I don't know if it's something we want to take up, but it was something that occurred to me.
I'm sure the Rules Committee can look at that, but that's a great segue to Joel. If anyone else wishes to speak under privilege of the floor for legislators? Mike Ziegler.
Just wanted to congratulate Cortland County for getting the Jets training camp. It would be better to yell at the players in person than through the screen. So, looking forward to that.
Thank you. We'll move on to our report from municipal officials. Welcome, Joel. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Joel Zumoff. I'm the member of the City of Ithaca Common Council from the 3rd Ward, the same one that Carol represents here. Thank you, Carol. That would be very nice if you would be able to do that, certainly. As you indicated, same thing happens with us. I have another meeting that should have started about now, and then another one at 7. So we are all very busy, and it is nice if we can make this accommodation. So if you can, that would certainly be nice. Okay. We certainly do like to have your representative come into our council meetings and let us know what you're doing. I hope you all feel the same way. We're now planning on having somebody come to at least one of your meetings every month to reciprocate and let you know what the city's doing. City's doing an awful lot. Probably the most important issue that we're dealing with now is the decision on the water supply. There's the water supply for the city, but obviously it also impacts all of the county. The decision as to whether we will rebuild our water plant on Water Street or whether we will buy water from Bolton Point. The Board of Public Works, the City Board of Public Works, is currently doing the environmental impact study, which is one of about 7 different items that Common Council will consider when we make that decision. We're planning on, we're hoping to make that decision roughly around September. Clearly, the end of the year gets difficult, as you people know also. We have budget issues toward the end of the year, and we would like to make the decision before that. But there's an awful lot to do. We're going to be having several additional meetings throughout May to discuss the seven-some items that we need to consider when we make our decision. But the Common Council will be making that decision. Okay, the College Town Plan. We had a consultant, Goody Clancy was the name of the consultants, who provided a spent several months in lots of public meetings and provided a plan to us for the College Town area. Turns out that plan is very controversial. In particular, there were issues of density, height of the buildings, and parking issues. And many of the residents in my ward, which is the third ward just south of the Cornell campus, sort of East College Town, if you will, and the fourth ward, which is a little west of College Avenue that Nathan represents on your county board, have concerns about that plan. So we are discussing that. A vote should be coming up within the next month or two as to whether we will accept that plan or modify it. The City Planning and Development Board has prepared a document that they would like us to incorporate into the plan, which changes an awful lot of the plan's recommendations. So I would say it's very controversial, and that's one of the major items that we're dealing with. Another planning item, we will just be starting a study of the Ithaca Commons and what we need to do to redesign the commons and fix it and deal with the utilities that run underneath the commons. A contract was awarded to a company called Sasaki from Boston. The mayor is appointing a client committee of about 15 people. I'm going to be one of those who will be working with Sasaki to devise probably about three alternative designs. And again, as with the College Town plan, we are planning on having lots of public input and public meetings and discussion, and we'll see if that's as controversial as the College Town plan is. Southwest Park, as you know, we're thinking about putting in a large residential area in the Southwest Park of the city, and currently that the environmental study of that area is being done. First, we need to understand, you know, whether we can build there and how much it would cost and how much remediation we might have to do for whatever stuff happens to be in that area right now. And those three things, the College Town Plan, the Commons Plan, and the Southwest Plan, sort of lead into the City Comprehensive Plan. Our current comprehensive plan is from the early 70s, so it's rather out of date, and I think lots of other towns and areas in around here in your county, our county, are in the process of reviewing their comprehensive plans. So we're in the beginning stages of doing that also. There is a city-town consolidation and shared services study. I understand a document has been produced. I haven't seen it yet. I believe the mayor and the town supervisor have been given copies about a week and a half or so ago. And they are reviewing it, and then, copies will be distributed to Common Council and the town board. And I'm anticipating that those two bodies will be getting together to discuss whatever it is that the recommendations are in that plan. Okay. We are working on an intermunicipal health insurance consortium to now the city and each of the towns and the other municipalities have their own health insurance, and a committee was set up to figure out whether they can be combined with some appropriate savings and improvements, and that process is going along very well. There are still a few items that are being negotiated, but it looks promising. Obviously, each with about 17 different municipalities that could participate, each one will have its own choice as to whether they want to. Clearly, we'll need some minimum number who are interested in order to make it work, but it looks fairly hopeful, and the target for that is January of this coming year of 2010 to get that going if it all works out appropriately. Dredging is an issue, of course. We need to dredge the lake and the inlets. That's been an issue for a long time. The current problem, and the continuing problem is where to put the dredge stuff. The various alternatives that we currently have, for example, the golf course, Stewart Park or Cass Park, come to mind right away. Obviously, have significant difficulties. We're still looking around and hoping we can come up with some reasonable alternative as to where to put the dredge spoils, is the term. There's the emergency training facility that our fire department uses and other organizations, including lots of them throughout the county. We just approved money to upgrade that, but there are issues as to its location. Again, if you remember, it's near the golf course and the TCAT facility, and people would like that to be moved. Fire department has no problems moving it. The question is where. So we will probably upgrade the facility as where it is while we are looking for a, shall we say, a better location somewhere in the county, most likely. Anybody has any great ideas in your towns or villages? There's a lot of nice open land that we could put a training facility, not just for the city, mind you, for everybody. That would certainly be great. We're working on with the Hangar Theater on a new lease for their building. That is a city building, if you did not know, that the Hangar Theater rents from the city, and the current lease was up the end of last year. So we're having negotiations on a new long-term lease. You may know the Hangar is in the process of a major capital campaign to upgrade that facility. So obviously they want a long-term lease in order to validate the investment of something like $3 million into the building. And those negotiations are going along very well. We hope to have that settled early summer. We have a new lease for the farmers market. That took a while, but that lease has been negotiated. So I think everybody is very happy that the farmers market will be where it is for quite a while. That's an asset to the city and to the entire town. Budget issues, obviously everybody has the same situation. What the city is doing currently, any positions that are open in the city, in order to have them filled, a small committee of the mayor, the controller, the human resources director, and one of my colleagues on council has to approve that the position is necessary in order for it to be filled. And any expenditures in the city over $500 need to be approved by the city controller. Those are at least two of the different issues, other than the normal budgeting that we and you always do to try to keep the budgets low. The reports on sales tax, I guess you get some of those reports too. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. And we just kind of keep our fingers crossed that the sources of revenue that we have will continue to be somewhat strong. And the last issue is elections. I understand all 15 of you are up for election this year, should you choose to run. That's a different situation than we have in the city. 5 of the 10 of us, one for each ward, is up for election. One of my colleagues, actually my colleague in the 3rd ward, Mary Tomlin, has announced that she is not going to seek re-election. The other 4 have not announced yet. We're certainly interested in what they have to say, and we're certainly interested in what all of you have to say about your desires and interests in running for re-election, or see if other people in the community are interested in running. This is a democracy. I guess as much as we all like to serve, it would be nice if we had a couple of contested elections so that people can debate the issues and make decisions. So I'll wish all of you luck if you choose to run, and we'll see how our common council and our county legislature look as of the beginning of next year.
Can I put that on a mailer?
So I'll be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Joel.
Okay, thank you very much. It was a privilege and a pleasure to come before you.
We have 2 quick questions, Kathy, and then Frank.
Hi there, Joel. I've got 2 issues that are pretty important to folks in my district that you mentioned, and one that you didn't. The fire tower is pretty important to a lot of members of my district. that the expansion is something that they're not happy about. And the notion that it's a go-ahead until it's moved is not something that sits well with my constituents, not just because of the smoke, but because of the traffic and the public safety hazards inherent in having it in that location by a park that is... people like to recreate and play in the park, and so it's an issue. The other one is the golf course. A lot of people in my district have grown up playing on that golf course. They learned how to play there, and it remains the only affordable and local golf course that many of them can use. And the thought of spreading wastes from dredging on it is pretty tough to handle, and there's been some fears expressed, some not so civilly and some as politely as possible, saying to me and to others, please reconsider that. The last one is something that you didn't mention, and I just want to ask you about it, and that is a proposed cell tower that would loom over not just the Fifth Ward, but pretty much over downtown that's being proposed possibly for an area near that fire tower. And I'd like to know if there's any more news about that. I know that it's something that Verizon has reportedly asked for, but isn't necessarily required. It's just something that they'd like to have to boost a signal that is a blank spot out in the middle of the lake, which seems like an odd place to boost the signal for, especially if the tower, if it's at its proposed height and would get a variance for its fallback, is built as has been proposed. What can you tell me about that?
Actually, I can't tell you anything. I've read the articles in the paper. Nothing has come before council. And I'm the liaison to the Board of Public Works, and I was away most of March, but I don't recall anything being discussed about that in the city at all, other than what I've seen in the paper. So
maybe I just had a really bad dream.
Excuse me?
Maybe I just had a really bad dream.
No, no, no. I've seen the articles in the paper, but I haven't seen anything official at least come to any of the, either the Board of Public Works or the city. And let me just mention, since you did sort of stress it, I want to make sure that everybody understands there has been no decision on the dredge spoils. I don't want to see articles in the paper screaming and yelling or getting emails about how we are going to put the dredge spoils on the city golf course. That is not decided. So please, I mean, that's one of the considerations, but there are others, and I'm sure none of us would like to do that. So I just want to make sure that's clear.
I appreciate that.
And Frank, Martha, then Will.
Joel, a couple of things. First, about the fire tower. I suspect
by fire tower you mean the training facility.
The training
correct?
Facility.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
The fact that you're considering other locations or would like to consider other locations, I suspect that has something to do with the proposed walkway that the city, you know, that's been a little controversial.
The waterfront.
But I would urge you to maybe get a hold of Lee Shurtleff, because of his ties to other fire companies and the emergency services planning. And we have that emergency services committee that involves, it's a broader spectrum of representation when I served on it than just the county and whomever. Okay. The question, though, that I want to ask you that may be a little bit sensitive. I don't know if the answer is going to be sensitive. As a frequent traveler on State Street, because of where I live, in the last week we've been treated to confined driving lanes because new stripes have been painted. Presents a little bit of a hazard because there are no standing signs on the north side of the street, and people take that to mean they can still park there because they're not standing. And it shrinks the lane considerably and puts you into, when you're coming down, it puts you into the other lane. But the question I want to ask you is about the bike lane. Several years ago, when Ben Nichols was mayor, he made quite a to-do about getting state monies to help restore some of the streets, including Seneca Street and part of State Street. And my recollection is, because those are state routes, he was successful in getting some of that money. Who assumes the liability for those bike lanes with that? Perhaps is the state assuming that liability should anything happen there? Is the city assuming any liability? And since bicycles are not licensed or required to have insurance in any way, was there some process that anyone went through in order to establish setting up formal bike lanes on State Street?
Okay, well, the process went through our transportation engineer and the city's Department of Public Works. I can't answer your questions in detail. The intent, of course, is that the bike lanes should make it safer. And when we did not have bike lanes, people rode bikes up anyway. So I guess you could argue that having the bike lanes might increase the number of bicycles that ride up, but it's not a question of there weren't any before and now there are. So I'm not sure I just don't know whether painting an official bike lane increases or changes any of the liability issues that would have been there before that was done. I don't know.
It certainly shrinks the width of a lane.
Of the driving lane.
Especially if people, you may want to take a look at those signs. If you really meant no parking instead of no standing, those signs need to be changed.
Okay,
but I think if you're a biker and you're coming down in front of one of Pam's trash trucks, believe me, it's anything but pleasant. So, is Bill Gray the person to ask that of?
You could, or Tim Logue is the traffic engineer. He did most, the transportation engineer. He did most of the work in figuring out where and how wide and all that type of thing.
How about the liability? Would Dan Hoffman be the person to ask?
He certainly could. I don't even recall that was discussed. And I think in the context that people always could ride bikes up, and our intent was to make it safer. Now, obviously, we couldn't increase the width of the road,
discussion. This can happen outside this body.
Fine. Okay, thank you.
And I'm going to ask people who have other questions for you to keep it very brief. If you have something, you can follow up with Joe outside this room. I appreciate it. We have staff waiting for resolutions. I have Martha, Will, and Mike Hattery next.
Question will be brief. I don't know about the answer. The training center. I confess I haven't read the articles. Are you proposing to upgrade it and then potentially move it? Have you asked other towns if they might be interested in hosting the facility before you spend money to upgrade it?
Well, that process will be ongoing. Brian Wilbur has no objections to doing that. He obviously needs a training center, and we'll be looking for the best place to do it. It'll be a while before we actually do any of the work, so I would anticipate that we will look around first. As you all know, that probably will not be particularly easy to do. So the idea was, if we get the grant money to upgrade it, we should do it, because it'll probably take a while to find another place and then build something. But meanwhile, we need to upgrade it. So.
Thank you. Will?
One more.
Thank you, Mike. Kathy Luz mentioned the concern about the Verizon Tower. That happens to got something going in my ears, because our neighborhood over in Glenside has a proposed tower. The alternate site, or one of the alternate sites, is just over the boundary in the city. So something that I think should happen is that the city and the towns should get together and develop some technical understanding of what is truly needed for these cell towers, and see if we can create some rationality to the placement, and not just totally be reacting to the companies that are coming in and putting them essentially wherever they want. It's my understanding that it will be coming up at the next meeting of the Council of Government.
Correct.
Governments. Okay. But I would encourage the city to be fully involved in that process.
Okay, my guess.
That's okay. You don't have to actually answer.
Okay.
You can do it by email or by phone or by airmail, whatever you want. Mike Hattery.
Relax, Joel. There's no more penetrating questions.
That's fine.
I was going to suggest that if you're interested in competitive elections, move to Dryden. We always have competitive elections.
I'm happy
and,
to hear
Kathy, that. If they do wreck that golf course, Dryden has a great family-oriented golf course that is very affordable and has great lake views.
And so does Chairman. We want a bike path so that we can take our golf clubs
sure.
up the bike path to your golf course.
And briefly, Carol?
Yeah, I'm going to match Will's tower question and raise him one. I would encourage us all to sit down again and look at what the county distribution of the towers that we have built and the fact that they are positioned to be able to provide coverage across the county and find out if we can hold steady in asking the cell phone companies to use the towers that we have already built at greatest expense. So I'd refer you to the same people Martha has. The question that I had, and you can send this to me by other means, is about the Hangar Theater lease that you mentioned negotiating. As liaison to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, I guess I'd like to be able to bring back information. If you are planning to do more than double, triple, or quintuple their current rent arrangements for that dollar a year lease, I'd be interested in knowing now that they have are putting the resources into fixing up the building. I'd hate to see them penalized, but I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about it. And you don't
they won't be
here.
Thank you, Joel. You have a very brief follow-up, Martha.
The conversation that Will talked about at TCOG is happening this Thursday. It's somewhere around between 3:45 and 4:30 on the agenda. And the county's towers don't fit where they want to put. We've tried. Trust me, we've tried. So it's a complicated question.
Thank you, Joel. You gave a very thorough report, and you generated a lot of questions.
Okay, thank you.
We have no special topics or presentations. I have no chair report, no chair appointments. Let's have a report from County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Just two items, both in the nature of meeting advisories and updates. First, and this picks up on what Joel talked about with respect to the health benefits consortium, that project is moving ahead through the Council of Governments very nicely and I think is on track to implement as of January 1st. There have been a series of individual meetings in town and village halls and here to explain the details of this plan. There will be follow-up meetings, but on a more regional basis in mid-May for public officials to kind of update them on the status of the project, the governing agreements, rates, and so forth. And I will get an email to each of you on this, but currently May 13th at 5:30 in the Board Warner Room of the library, and again May 19th at 5:30, also in the Board Warner Room, again intended for public officials throughout the county to be updated on the status of the project. And I will provide an email to all of you on that. Second, just a reminder, something that I know is already on your calendars, we are going to do the budget retreat on the 29th. I think start time is 6:30.
No, 6:45.
6:45. I mess it up every
6:30
time.
6:30 for food.
6:30
6:45 for the actual work.
At TCAT, just to kind of begin the expectations, I'll tell you what you already know. This is going to be a very difficult year. As we look at numbers for 2010, and we are immersed in those numbers right now, we will have our work cut out for us, so that will be an important first step at retreat in really trying to accomplish two things. One is to make some decisions about this year and about how we should proceed this year given our situation, and then to set a levy target for next year. So we will be prepared with a presentation about our circumstances, and again, I hope at the end of that meeting to have targets that come out of it. That's my report.
Thank you. If there's no questions, move on to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report.
Thank you. And Finance Director David Squires.
Well, I'll grab the opportunity to give you a small piece of good news in a very challenging economic time. We got notice that our tobacco settlement payment for this year is actually larger than our budget. We anticipate now that we'll be $92,000 over budget for the tobacco revenue that's in part of unallocated revenue. And the other thing I wanted to point out is we're having a visit this week from Moody's. I took the opportunity because a Moody's analyst is attending an event at Cornell to have her come over and talk to the county administrator and I so that they would put a face with our government. We have a good reputation with them, but we've never gone down to New York to make a pitch about our situation. And just so happens about 3 weeks ago, Moody's issued a report basically that said that all municipalities in America were under severe stress and were likely to be downgraded. So I think that this will provide us the opportunity at least to show that we are being planning for the trying times that we're facing.
Thank you, David. Thanks for being proactive. If there's no questions, we'll move on to the consent. Oh, I'm sorry. Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Pam Magsy.
Yes, I'd like to add Resolution L, declaring May 2nd, 2009, as Green Grand Prix Day in Tompkins County. This was a resolution that was sent to us by our cohorts in Schuyler County, and I would like to add it because it's imminent, May 3rd. We have May 2nd. Well, it says May 3.
You're reading the wrong resolution.
I know. Okay. I'm not reading the resolution. But
Do we have a second? Julie Kiefer? All in favor of adding this to the agenda this evening? Are there any opposed? That passes with one opposed. Okay. If there's no further resolutions to be added or withdrawn, we'll move to the consent agenda. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial. They can pass in a single vote. I will read the appointments and then the actual resolutions. If you need to pull them, let me know. Appointments to the Environmental Management Council, Christine Shaw, Andrea Turner, and Spring Buck. Hillview Row Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Dooley Kiefer. Homeownership Oversight Committee, Ed Marks. Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Deb Teeter and Richard Eady. Mental Health Subcommittee, Leslie Ann Connors. Substance Abuse Subcommittee, Nancy Zaler. And Criminal Justice Advisory Board, Alternatives to Incarceration, Nancy Zook. For resolutions, we have Resolution A. This is from Health and Human Services Committee and Budget, Capital, and Finance. Budget adjustments, various departments. Resolution B, Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
I have a question about that one. So.
Do you want it pulled?
Yeah.
Okay. Resolution C from Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee, replacing one appointment of temporary Board of Assessment Review hearing member to serve on administrative hearing panels. And four resolutions from Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution D. Okay. Resolution E, funding of. Resolution F, funding of tourism project grants revised. It's in your red folders. And Resolution G. Okay. For those that are still on, who would like to move the consent agenda and the appointments? Will Brimack moves it. Carol Chalk seconds. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Julia, for waiting for your consent resolution. I see that Steve Estes is here for, I believe, Resolution I. Nathan, might you be able to move at least Resolution I before you do your committee report?
All right, Resolution I, sponsorship of the 2009 Diversity Consortium Community Roundtable event, and I so move.
Seconded by Jim Dennis. Is there a discussion? Frank Proto.
I want to clarify that this event does not replace the Human Rights Commission's annual event, the award ceremony. but I have some questions, Nathan. And I'm sorry that it has to, the discussion has to highlight this particular item. But we budget, do you recollect the budget for 2009? My recollection is that it was somewhere between $40,000 and $45,000.
Right, and I think it was for a couple of years.
And my concern is that we have other departments, we have departments, this is not a department, this is a program, that would love to have their annual dinner or the consortium sponsored to this amount of money. Mm-hmm. Most of our organizations go out and raise some money to sponsor events. Mm-hmm. And I think in this tight budget time, I think it might be inappropriate, since this was a new program for this year, and there was a lot of discussion, if you recall, during budget time last year about this, about the program itself, and we were very careful about not adding new programs and new initiatives, yet we did add this one. So I wanted to let you know that I don't think this is the time. I'm not opposed personally to having this event, but I think that having the public body sponsor it and pay for it really is an affront to some of our other initiatives and some of the other events that go on, not only in the county, but through the Human Services Coalition and through our own departments that need to raise funds. So I will not be supporting this for that reason.
If I might respond, and Steve, feel free to correct me. This roundtable event has been, in years past, Cornell and Ithaca College have sponsored it.
The city
of Ithaca has sponsored it. And so the spirit of this resolution is in part that it's our turn to sponsor it, since other major community entities and municipalities like the city of Ithaca have participated in sponsored events in the past.
I think that this is a small portion of the total expense as well. Kathy Lou Ferreira is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to add on to what Nathan said. I'm a Cornell employee. Several times in the past, Cornell has undertaken to send paid employees to the Diversity Consortium to work it as a networking event, mm-hmm. as a way of building community. And I agree that these are harsh economic times, but actually statistics show that the people most impacted in these times are the people who have the least economically and who would benefit the most from an event like this, as well as employers who get to learn best practices. I just want to say that the events that Cornell and the city have sponsored in the past haven't by any means been lavish events, and yet they have managed to send employees, in addition to a sum like this, probably, I won't say 10 times over, but the investment on the part of those bodies has been larger than this, I know that much. And I'd just like to suggest that as we talk about collaboration and the importance of building community, we recognize that it means that as a government, we get to not only bask in the glow of collaborative efforts, we get to support them to the extent that we can. I think this amount, although it's an amount that for some departments would be significant, I believe that it's a good investment, and I'd like to suggest that to my colleagues that this is something that we should be supporting this year of all years.
Thank you. And Dooley, and then Jim Dennis.
I wanted very much to include in this resolution somewhere as giving the history of this event, when it's been held before and who the various sponsors have been, but I've been unable to track down that information in sufficient detail to propose an amendment except for one place. So in the fourth whereas, I would like to amend it to read, whereas the Diversity Consortium's Community Roundtable event, first held in 2006, and then again in 2007, and thereafter to be held every 2 years, plays a significant role.
That's right.
I have found out at least the years when it's been held, and I will vote to support this year, but I would like to make a request that maybe when Leslin gets back, I'm not sure what the right way is. If a history could be pulled together, which includes the levels of support of the various major underwriters, I would find that a very useful thing to know. It's been very hard to track it down.
Okay. Is that friendly to the mover and seconder?
That is friendly.
All right. And we'll move on to Jim Dennis.
thank you, Michael. Since Steve has endured this long, I would like him to make some comments about the event. And from my point of view, I look at all our papers, and it says inclusion through diversity and all kinds of other things. And I think it's an event. It's all part of the fabric that we're trying to create. And I think this shouldn't take a long time to vote on.
Go ahead, Steve.
Do you have any summary of?
Sure. The Diversity Consortium was pulled together originally in 1999. It was a group effort. I think it was City of Ithaca, Cornell University, and Tompkins County. We've met. Our mission is to provide education and community outreach around diversity and inclusion issues, and I think we've been doing a good job of that. I provided some information to the committee earlier, the Chief Power Committee. We have in the past had support from Cornell University, Ithaca College, and they have borne greater percentages in the past. Quite a bit of our service is in-kind service. I know that in 2007, Cornell footed the bill for all of the color printing services as well as sponsoring, I believe, a cash amount of $1,000. So it came out to be about $2,500 in 2007. Tompkins County in 2007 sponsored a $1,000 rate with no in-kind services other than the efforts that I put into it. The City of Ithaca has always put in a smaller amount, but a significant amount nonetheless. Ithaca College, same. This year we're getting a little bit of support from the Society of Human Resource Managers of Tompkins County, so that should help a bit. We also support ourselves through the fees and annual membership dues for this organization. So the total amount is of this roundtable event is not $2,800, it's closer to $11,500, and we've raised the remainder of that money through other sources. So we're asking you to support us about a quarter of the roundtable event, and I would greatly appreciate that.
Thank you, Steve. And Kathy, do you have a comment?
This won't affect my vote, but the wording on the whereas makes it sound to me as though we're saying that we think it's going to be held every 3 years, and I'm not sure we have any pull in that area or that we can predict it or that we even should be saying that, but I'll support it. It's a little bit fuzzy.
I believe the Diversity Consortium themselves have chosen to have a roundtable every 2 years.
That's
my memory.
That's right.
From 2 years ago.
That's what I thought.
Okay, which I think is Dooley's wording, every 2 years.
Yeah. Yes.
Correct. Okay. Final comments before we vote. Martha?
I think one of the reasons I would vote for some funding is leverage and sort of impact. I think this is a great, great impact for really not that much money. I think we should support it.
All right, ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution I? Please raise your hands and keep them up. And any opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. It passes with 10 in favor and 4 opposed. Thank you very much, Steve, and thank you, Nathan, for moving it. We have one other item that a staff member is waiting for, I believe. This is Planning Development Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution K. Pam, might you move that?
And we can adopt. This is the revised version that you was on your desk. Or in your red folder, I guess. Adoption of Climate Smart Communities Pledge. And I so move.
Is there a second? Martha Robertson seconds. Is there discussion? Go ahead, Pam.
Well, I just will offer. This came to us from the Department of Environmental Conservation. It was put together by them and the New York State Department. State Department and NYSERDA and And they, it's basically trying to organize all the municipalities around New York State to work together to decrease energy demand. Anyway, and of course, we in Tompkins County have been doing this for years now, and but we are joining the ranks just to support this. Dooley was kind enough to go through it and sort of change it so that it fit to what we have done already and what we have already planned to do. So this is really a resolution that will just add our support to all the other municipalities and counties in New York State to deal with the our environmental issues.
Thank you. Any questions? Frank and then Tyke.
Thanks, Mike. I'm not going to support this, and I'll tell you why, or I'll explain why. First, it wasn't until the committee meeting a question that I had with regard to wording in the second whereas of the original resolution with regard to health threats and exotic diseases. It wasn't until Dooley reported at the planning committee meeting at around 5 o'clock what the where the backup data for that statement existed. And to be candid with you, none of us, perhaps except with the exception of Dooley, have had an opportunity to review it. But that's one of my concerns. The impact on the municipalities is certainly another. If you refer to item 6, my favorite phrase, land use planning, again. Another item that I have a concern about is if the, and again, it wasn't clear that the DEC had asked us to do this until the meeting this afternoon, but that really precipitates a question from me. What is the state and the DEC prepared to lay out financially to help implement some of these ideas? And I think that's a rhetorical question because I think we know the answer to it because they're unfortunately operating short-staffed as it is, let alone money. And I find that this resolution, while I support certain parts of it, particularly building on the effort that this board made several years ago with regard to the Danby Academy to help promote jobs and environmentally sensitive jobs. There's some support for that in item 8. But the troubling thing for me is the age-old comment that I keep hearing Frank Liguori make in my ears, the former commissioner of planning. His comment when we were doing the study for landfills was line up your experts because we can find experts on both sides of any of these issues. And while some will take issue with this, we were treated to an article in the Ithaca Journal on back in February by Paul Sheridan that sort of disputes some of the global warming items that some others have since come out with and said that simply isn't true. Well, I think the jury is still out on a lot of things with regard to that. The last item in this resolution, item 10, committing to an evolving process. There's no mention in there about talking about failed efforts. How about acknowledging at some point that not all things work? I go back to, and this will be controversial, I'm sure, I go back to the solar panels on the library. While it's a politically small p, in this community, sensitive issue, and some support it, and some don't, the payback period for that is extremely long. At some point, it probably will pay off, but it may not be while any of us are on the board or even around. So I'm not saying that's a failed effort, by the way, but I do think that we need to be honest with the general public because there's a hint in any resolution like this of a potential for financial contribution while we're trying to encourage municipalities to participate, there's always that hook that if you participate, we'll throw some funds your way. And I find that that's a little bit disingenuous. But again, I don't think it would be out of keeping to at least identify or at least acknowledge that we ought to acknowledge our failures to our projects and efforts that haven't worked or may not work. But I come back to the initial concern about how much money is this going to take and who's going to supply it.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Tyke Randall.
I was curious of what the conversation was in committee. Was this unanimous? If not, I'd kind of like to hear why it wasn't.
You just
the
heard
people
it.
That Frank was one, obviously.
Yeah,
so
I think I was the only one. Tyke.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pam?
I guess I would just like to, there was a letter that was sent out by the heads of the four agencies that I was talking about, and they have actually produced a guide for local officials. And they, you know, they talk about the climate change threatens communities across the state in many ways. But then it says, leaving this work for the future will make it harder to achieve necessary reductions. And they say, because local governments have so many obligations, we are developing a climate smart communities guide, which is what this is called, to help you identify cost-effective emission reduction and adaptation measures. The guide will offer in one reference a full menu of actions that local government can take at this critical time. So I think that that's what the reason that they're doing this is that they're trying to help the local municipalities look at the issues that are before them, and the state is offering a guide for municipalities and local governments to look at their situations and make decisions about their own locations. I do not believe that what I have read here, that they are trying to organize and capture us in an environmental whatever you want to call it. I mean, I don't think that this is an effort for them to grab power. I think it's an effort for them to reach out and try and help local municipalities deal with problems that we foresee with the environment.
Thanks, Pam. I have three other speakers before, so there were some cards being passed around. If they got log jammed somewhere, can people keep signing them and pass them on? I don't know where they are. Some three cards, Mike or Pam or Dooley, are they in your pile somewhere?
Three cards?
Three little note
yes.
cards?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
we just like to have them.
This meeting has been
they have anything
so
to do with this resolution?
Well,
just like to keep them circulating. Okay. Mike Ziegler, Jim Dennis, then Kathy. Mike.
I just want to say, I'm not going to vote for this, and I'll tell you why in a second, but I mean, I think this county should be proud. Over the last 5 years, you've basically done all this. So I'm a little confused as to why this is. It just seems now at this point, every 2 months, we're restating things that you've already done. So it's like, great that these guys are hopping on the Tompkins County bandwagon or whatever, but I don't know. I think you guys have done a better job than even this. So the problem and the reason I can't vote for this is actually number 4 in the resolution, encourage renewable energy for local government operations. That reads like you're more than encouraging. That reads like we are committing ourselves to buying as much of the local government's power, heat, hot water as needs as possible from these services, from these forms. We could do this right now. I mean, we could go out tomorrow. We could, you know, we could buy all our power, it's my understanding, from wind if we so chose to. It would be really, really expensive, but we could do it. So I think you got to be careful with things like that just because you really are committing yourself to doing something that would be very expensive. So just wanted to get that out there. That's about it.
Thank you, Michael. I'm Jim Dennis.
It's always great when you have the opportunity to debate global warming. I have a daughter-in-law who's a scientist, and she spends her time in Antarctica and Greenland and Alaska, and she's involved and been involved for many years with drilling into the ice core. And basically what they do is they send a drill down and they bring it up, and they can tell you when the Industrial Revolution took place. They can tell you almost anything you want to know about the history of the Earth through the study of the ice. And these people are from every country in the world. This program has been supported by the federal government for 10 years, 12 years. They actually work for the Defense Department to do all this study. And they pretty much have decided that there's something going on. And we can stay here and decide that, well, we don't believe that. The Earth is still flat. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. Everyone who talks about ecology, and I'm not an expert on any of this, but they always say you have to, localities literally have to do their thing. And if all the localities work on green things, doing these kinds of things, that's the only way we're going to be able to change what we're doing and the way we add carbon to the atmosphere. I'm going to support this. I think every effort this county and every other county can make to do things to bring to people's consciousness what's going on is going to be a plus for it.
Thanks, Jim. And Kathy Lou Cerrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have to be a member of the Flat Earth Society to want to take a critical look at resolutions that we pass. And I want to say that this one here, despite the changes that were made at committee, is one that I can support. In the past, y'all might have seen me voting against some climate-related resolutions, and primarily that was because a lot of them were taken around to lots of different municipalities. They were asked for their input, and we took what was a consensus document and decided on the floor at the moment that we would change the wording. The wording changes in this, although I don't agree with the strength of some of them, I think the intent is good, and I'm going to support it, but I have a couple of changes to offer myself. In particular, paragraph 8 is of interest to me because I'm paying attention to and have been watching the Green Jobs Initiative, because it probably won't come as a surprise to most people in this room that all green jobs are not good jobs. You can hand somebody a caulk gun and pay them minimum wage and not teach them anything, and yeah, they might help with global warming, but you're not giving them a skill, you're not allowing them to better their economic status. So one of the things that I'd like to see us as a community focus on, because unlike Mike, I don't think we've done it all here. I think that sometimes in our efforts to rush towards sustainability, we don't necessarily always think about the impact on individual workers in Tompkins County of our actions. A case in point would be buying things from other countries. I see the phrase import substitution, and I'm hoping that what that means is rather than importing something where there are few, if any, environmental regulations and they can pour the waste on the ground and use sweatshop labor and it costs a lot in fossil fuel to bring it over, that we will be thinking about buying items made here and that we'll encourage a resurgence of manufacturing here, but it would be green manufacturing, and moreover, it would be good jobs, good manufacturing jobs. So the phrasing that I'd like to suggest in paragraph 8 for changes would be in the first, second, if I'm correct about the import substitution phrase, okay, first, second, third, fourth line, where it talks about development training and school curricula that support, I would like to add good jobs in the emerging green-collar job sector. Because we can add jobs, but if they're not good jobs, I don't know that we should be supporting them necessarily.
How about good-paying jobs?
Well, good-paying is okay, but sometimes you have a job that may not pay as well as you'd like, but people will take it because it has benefits. These days, with the health care crisis, I'm just saying,
okay, a
good job has a broader definition than necessarily a good-paying job, and in that way, I could be said to be watering it down, but I'm trying to make this broad enough that it'll appeal to a wide range of people.
Proposed wording is good jobs. Is that friendly?
That's fine.
to the seconder?
A second one would be in the last full sentence. It starts out business development and create green training opportunities for. I'd like to add the unemployed for obvious reasons. So it would say green job training opportunities for the unemployed workers. The unemployed, comma, y'all can edit it correctly. The unemployed, comma, workers, high school students, and college students. So that it's clear that we're talking about helping people who may have been put out of work recently.
Thank you, Kathy. Is that friendly, Pam? And
yes, that's fine. I was just going to say unemployed and employed workers.
Great.
Okay, and okay. Martha, that's okay with you? The second.
Good enough. It gets
okay.
To it.
Okay. And the last person on the list before we vote, hopefully, Mike Hattery.
Thank you. I've picked a different whereas that troubles me. That would be number three, the one that makes this clear language about the legislature believing that climate change is linked to human activity. Let me cite a Rasmussen poll that was released Friday. Just one out of three voters, or 34%, now believe that global warming is caused by human activity. I'm going to vote with the plebes on this one. The lowest finding yet in Rasmussen reports and national surveying. However, a plurality, 48% of the political class, believe humans are to blame. I'm also going to vote with a recent Nobel laureate in physics who said, I'm a skeptic. Global warming has become a new religion. It's not mine.
Okay. If there's no further comments, we have the revised Resolution K, Adoption of Climate Smart Communities Pledge. Are ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand and keep them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. That passes 10-4. Thank you very much, Pam. We could move to... Pam, the tourism consent agenda items for Brett to be able to move on to.
All right.
That okay. Would be D, E, and G.
Okay, I would like to move Resolution D, approval of contract for arts and culture development community arts partnership. So moved.
Is there a second? Carol Chalk seconds. Is there questions from the person who pulled it? Frank Proto.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Pam, you and I talked about this actually walking downtown one afternoon. The only reason I wanted, I'm supporting it, don't worry. The only reason I had this pulled, I was unable to make the planning committee meeting. If you total across what we've contributed to each of these entities from 2004 to 2009, with the exception of Light in Winter, Cugin Nature Center, and the Science Center, because those came in kind of at the tail end here. The total of those columns is touching $1 million. My question to Pam, and she said it's been being taken care of, I thought it might be an opportunity for you to say something about the organization that is responsible for the oversight, that collects the 10% for administering these programs, and the oversight for the applications. My interest was that we ought to have a, how are we doing, are we getting a good bang for our buck since we've put in $1 million, or with 2009 we will have put in close to $1 million. That was my concern, my interest, and Pam assured me that that was taking place and that at some point we will have a report by entity as to how well our investment is doing.
So Pam has assured him. You could just say yes or no to the question. Is it a good bang for the buck?
Yes, Pam. I can agree with what Pam assured you.
Yeah. Okay.
That's all I wanted to hear. Right.
Given that question's been asked, we're ready to go to what was on the consent agenda. All in favor of Resolution D, please raise your hand. And is anyone opposed? It passes unanimously. I believe two others were pulled. Resolution
yes.
E.
Resolution E, funding of new tourism initiative grants. I so move.
Is there a second? Carol Chalk seconds. Are there questions?
Mike, I asked that be pulled, and I think I did that in error. It was actually G I wanted pulled. I apologize.
All right. Are we ready to vote on Resolution E? All in favor? Funding of new tourism initiative grants. Raise your hand. Any opposed? That's also unanimous. And on to Resolution G. Pam?
Resolution G, funding of community celebration grants, and I so move.
And is there a second? Carol Chalk, second. Thank you. Is there discussion? Frank?
Yes. If I had been at the committee meeting, I would have raised this item. I was a little bit concerned after all the effort that has gone into restoring the monuments in DeWitt Park that the project did not get funding. The page is not numbered, but it's item 4 in that grid.
That's the very next page after our resolution.
Thank
you. Bottom.
The project is very close to fruition. The actual celebration will take place this fall. It has been a collaboration for those of you that are interested in how well this community comes together. The bricklayers, the carpenters union, the electricians have all contributed time to restoring things in that park, laying bricks, helping with the lights, and actually cleaning some of the monuments. The city of Ithaca has been behind it and has been very gracious. The actual owner of the park, as you know, is the Presbyterian Church, and the pastor has been very supportive of the project as well. There have been groups that have come together, including Cornell students, some IC students, on cleanup, and I think I was a little troubled when I read the explanation contained in the body of why it wasn't approved, and I'll get to that in a second. The organization that's overseeing this is through the Veterans Group, and Holly Hollingsworth, who some of you know, has been sort of the spark plug in getting the work done. They've raised a lot of money. They've had breakfasts and whatnot, and this is probably the last $2,000 they need to pull this off this fall. And I think the comment that really troubled me, if you read the comment here, it says, the project belongs in the Parks Planning Commission, although glad that the monuments, that we're fixing the monuments, and that they have already given enough funding. Well, let me tell you, the names on those monuments come from all over this county, and some of the people on those monuments, I'm sure, have given enough and to make sure that we don't forget them either. So I would like to, at the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman,
now,
I'd like to
now would be the time.
I'd like to move to restore the $2,000 for this funding.
Is there a second? Julie Kiefer, is there discussion? Kathy Lou Serrera.
What struck me about this comes from a little bit of a different direction. When I go around the county and I compare the state parks with the facilities that the city has for parks, it's obvious. I mean, if you look at Stewart Park and if you look at this park, that we need some help locally in maintaining our parks. And I think that what this brought up for me was, a Parks Planning Commission. Maybe there's a way, since we're so good at collaborating, that we could figure out how to focus some of this energy. I agree with Frank that the efforts behind this are inspired. They're motivated by really good reasons. And, I don't have any problem considering restoring it. I would like for us to take this germ of an idea, though, and use it to help, because our parks are really shabby looking, and there's got to be a way that we can figure out how to get together to restore, maybe not them to their former glory, but to make them a better usable. And I don't mean just city parks. So I know that you're maybe wanting to move on, but I think that there's a good idea in this, and that it's something that I'd like to encourage the arts folks in the tourism program in particular to give some thought to and maybe consider coming up with a proposal for us, because when I think about the monument, I think maintenance dollars. I can't help it. And if it's owned by somebody else and we've committed to it, there's a way that we're incurring by assumption some kind of future expenditures. So I want to be not necessarily wary of that. I want to be cognizant of it, and I want to think ahead. So that's what comes up for me.
This is debate on adding $2,000 for a community celebration relating to restoration of monuments. I have Jim Dennis next, and then Frank for a quick one.
I heard Frank say that he wanted to restore it, and he got a second. Where would the money come from? I mean, out of the tourism?
Yes, I think there are still some funds in
the
tourism.
So they would have to readjust there.
I don't think they've allocated everything, have they, Brett? Or Carol maybe would know?
Yeah, I can answer that question. If you'll look at page 6 of this list of 25 proposals,
yes.
There were a total of $40,000 worth of requests mm-hmm. in 25 proposals, of which the panel was asked to award approximately, actually, $14,000. There's another round to the
yes.
celebrations projects in the fall. So that $28,000 that's available for the whole year was to be split half and half the spring, or in some portion the spring and the fall. So, with the cycle in the fall of organizations and our municipalities throughout the county that are on a cycle that will need the money then. So I happened to sit in on this particular panel. Carol Kamen did an incredible job masterminding this group of people through 25 proposals in the hour. We actually ended up a half an hour late, hour and a half that we had to go through them. And it was a very, you know, very tough decisions. And we had proposals from, towns and projects and celebrations that either hadn't come before or were coming for things that were adding new elements. And so I think it was just a decision about what could be accomplished with this is probably
Jim's question about where the money would come from is it's actually
if it came out
of the fall allocation pot.
Okay.
Potentially the fall allocation pot, unless
yes,
they
but realize that then your favorite yes. projects from your various towns will have a smaller
will be
pot
compromised. A further question, Jim?
I would just like to say to people, and I'm going to put on my Dooley Kiefer hat for a moment. I would like to say to people, the comments are not good. that if you turn someone down, you turn them down. And you write them a note and you say why we're turning you down. But you don't put something in like, the use seems wasteful. You know, I mean, that's nonsense. I wouldn't accept that from a third grader, and adults shouldn't say those kind of things in documents like this.
Okay, my next person briefly is Frank, then I have Martha, Mike Sigler, Carol, I guess, and Will.
Just going back to something Carol said, the fall round will be too late. This is supposed to take place
yes.
This fall. Secondly, it's not meant to take money out of someone else's pocket. But Kathy's suggestion about, is Brett still here?
Yes, he is.
Kathy's suggestion about doing something with the parks, it wasn't too long ago that we came up with money for Stewart Park and for Rick Manning to do a study, if you will, and I'm guessing, but I think that was about $25,000.
Frank, can you speak to the amendment for $2,000?
If you will hold others to the same thing.
I am trying to.
Thank you. At any rate, I've said my piece. Thank you, Mike.
I have Martha next.
I probably should have asked this in committee, but I guess I don't. Can anyone explain why this needs a port-a-john? Is this a...
Brett sits down. He has no idea.
I wanted to make the comment that this isn't my program. I'm only administering the organization
okay.
development program.
I mean, I hear...
I can't answer these questions.
It
we don't have an answer.
It's a ceremony, but it sounds like a day-long...
It's going to be a long day-long ceremony.
We don't have an answer?
All right.
Are we ready to move on? Mike Sigler is next.
I just want to make two comments. Is that I used to serve on this committee, and I can understand why they rejected it. However, I will say that the design here is to actually bring people into the county. At least that's how I always read it. But it's also to celebrate the community, obviously.
Correct.
I go to this thing that Frank tells me about every year, this bonfire, this signal fire.
Watch fire.
Yes, down at Miles Point. I got to tell you, there's like 100 people down there. And there is a real sense of community there. So I have to imagine that this is going to attract about the same amount of people. You know, it's something that our own department, I think the History Center, did get involved in trying to find what was on one of the markers. This is a long-term process, so I don't think $2,000 is too much to spend on this project. With that said, I know we also have a beautification fund for that. Would
this is for the celebration?
A little bit better. I realize that. If you guys don't vote for that, I mean, maybe the restoration money we can get from the beautification. But I'm going to vote for this, Frank. I hope other people do. I think a lot of people will show up.
Thank you, Carol Chuck.
I agree. The point is well taken from Frank about the comments here, and I agree. I think that we need if there were a greater level of.
From Jim.
No, Frank made the comment about already gave enough.
Okay.
And that is a really poorly worded comment, and I agree with Jim's comment as well that all of these, you know, as we go through, I think that it really speaks to the need for staffing, greater level of staffing for the committee.
You're speaking to the amendment for £2,000.
I guess unless we're going to award the money separately from the counties, from another pot, I have problems with this because the committee, it was so difficult for the committee to balance, and there were so many others in here whose amounts were either turned down or seriously lowered based on the criteria in the RFP for the grants. The history behind the celebrations grants, there was $10,000 that came separately. This did not historically, the celebrations, fit within the tourism funds. They were not considered activities that were designed to attract visitors. So they were awarded separately. And at some point, the legislature that predated me, the legislature asked the tourism board to. Kathy's nodding. It may have been during your tenure.
You're
on
speaking
the
to the $2,000 amendment, right?
This does because the.
She's correct.
The tourism board was asked to administer that portion of the program with the $10,000 still separately allotted, and then asked to absorb it within the budget. They've okay. now not only absorbed but raised that fourfold
correct.
To $40,000 and set specific criteria. So I guess I think that if we're going to allot $2,000, I'm not sure that we should ask it to come out of those same funds.
Sounds like you won't be in favor of the amendment. Will Burbank is next, and I have Kathy, Jim Dennis, and Dooley. I'd like to come to a vote.
I'm with Carol on this. I think full respect for the points that Frank's raised, and I think we should be very proud of the effort that went in there. I think we should also respect the hard work that this group did. The explanations are just, I think, for our own benefit, I think in some sense of their thinking, but as they come through, they, I don't think, do justice to the thought process and the hard decisions they came to. So I'm going to vote against that amendment.
Kathy Lucerera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've served on these committees. They are hard decisions. The notes are things that we asked for. We asked for explanations. I agree with Carol that if we had staff, they could dress it up and put it in long prose and make us feel better about these tough decisions. But that's what they are, is tough decisions. The last piece is I'm going to support this. Many times I've heard my colleagues here talk about legislator oversight. This is an example why we like to have legislator oversight. I think it's okay and not a slap in the face to the committee for us to make a decision about this. It's not something that I always agree with, but it's not like we asked 17 communities to collaborate on wording. It's something that we have oversight on. So I'll go ahead and support this, but I still would like to ask people to think about further uses for funding like this that would enhance our physical space.
Thank you. Jim Dennis?
24 out of 25 ain't bad, and I'd like to call the question.
Is there a second to call the question? Greg Stevenson, that's non-debatable. All in favor of...
I have a question. Oh.
Excuse me? That's non-debatable.
Not debatable.
All in favor of proceeding to a vote, please raise your hand and keep them up.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? 1, 2. That passes 12 to 2. We'll proceed
and
to a vote.
Then I have a point of procedure or question for our attorney. I sat on the grants review panel and...
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Is this a point of order you're asking about?
A point of order. I guess it's a point of order. About whether I should vote on this, having sat on the grants review panel.
There's no conflict.
Okay.
I don't see any conflict.
All right, all in favor of Resolution G with, I'm sorry, the amendment of $2,000 for restoration of monument celebration, the amendment that proposed by Frank. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and opposed. 1, 2, that passes 12 to 2. Now we're back to the main motion. Ready to vote. Dooley Kiefer on the main motion, now amended with $2,000.
There were two voices that asked that this come off the consent agenda. And the two items that I wanted to address, one was the monuments in DeWitt Park, which Frank handled very well. I took time to read all of this. I, too, have served on this panel 1 year, so I know what it's like. And it's very challenging. The comments that point out which items are being held for the fall pot of money. That's not what it's called, the fall round. There are only two of them. They don't add up to that much. I'm sure there will be additional applications, but so far there's not a problem with that pot being diminished for this. And the other item in this celebrations list that concerned me was the what seemed like sort of denigration of the clock museum, which is has been created as a labor of love.
It's on the first page. It's item
really
number
nice
one.
Little place, and it's probably true, as the notes say, that it's correct to have to worry about the viability over long term. But as far as I know, this is the first time that that particular museum has asked for anything to try to make it more of a destination in the community. And I was really sorry to see its request just not granted anything.
Are you moving towards
and
the
I would
amendment?
Move, I would move to... award this one $1,500 out of the 19-something that was recommended.
Is there a second? Dies for lack of a second. We're back to the main motion. Thank you, Dooley. All in favor? Are ready to vote on G as amended by $2,000. All in favor of that with the amendment? And are there any opposed? That passes unanimously with the amendment. Thank you very much. We have one other item that someone is waiting for, which is back to Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee.
Yes,
this
I have
Resolution J.
Yep, I have Resolution J, urge New York State Legislature to clarify the open meetings law in regard to political caucuses, and I so move.
And seconded by Jim Dennis. Is there discussion? Dooley Kiefer.
I wanted to commend Bruce Estes for his dedication to this topic, that he came again and he gave us a handout. I don't think that any of us are confused about what we can hold executive sessions for. Caucuses are really different, and so I have no desire to change this resolution, but I appreciated the additional words from Robert Freeman.
All right. Further discussion? Frank Proto, Mike Sigler, then Nathan.
First, Dewey, I hate to keep... I hate...
I will.
It goes back to what Jim Dennis said. I have to say something Dooley would say. In the resolve, if you read that garbled English, I would like to suggest that we reverse some words here. In the second line, the one that begins with clarify, in all honesty, I think it should read clarify the open meetings law. And it, in my opinion, with regard to political da-da. As it pertains to.
We'll start with regards to. Is that friendly by Nathan?
No S.
With regard to. And is that okay with Jim, the seconder?
Okay.
That's okay. We're on point.
The comment that I want to make, is that considered
it was
friendly?
It was friendly.
Okay. Bruce Estes gave us that write-up. But as I understand it, regardless of what the state comes back with, if this passes, we're not obligated to agree with what they... It's just a suggestion.
Clarification.
It's clarification. I mean, regardless of what they suggest to us, because I like what some of the stuff you handed out. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. I have Mike Sigler, then Nathan.
I just wanted to say, I want to give Nathan a lot of credit for this. I mean, I brought it forward, but he made the changes that I think made it palatable to a lot more people. So I was very glad with the final outcome. But to Bruce, I agree with a lot of the things you're saying here. Since this is actually just asking the state for clarification, I'll be more than happy to write our senators and our assemblywoman and say, we passed it, hopefully passed this tonight, and here are some of the suggestions we've had from the community based on this resolution coming forward. But I'm satisfied with what's come out here. I'm pretty happy with it. So.
Thank you, Michael. Nathan, then Carol, then Tyke.
Yeah, I just have a brief comment. When I read the editorial from the Ithaca Journal about it, and one of the paragraphs said, why would we ask the state legislature about this after they had such a secretive budget process? and my response to that is that, we should ask them so that they can ask themselves. And I think that by pushing them to explore their own political caucusing, then we can get better results for not just us, but for the rest of the state.
Carol, and then Tyke.
I'm not sure. I don't necessarily have an objection to the notion of asking them to clarify, but for a resolution that's asking the state to clarify, it's not entirely clear to me what it is we're asking them to clarify. So it seems to me an unclear resolution. Are we specifically asking them whether choosing leadership is a political matter that can be dealt with in caucus, which is what this all came up over? Are we asking them specifically, do we want, the guidelines so that we don't end up with the situation as it is now in the city of Ithaca, where I believe
open meetings law has an exemption for political caucusing. It has a long list of things that are included under political caucusing.
I'm getting there. More than three people from the city of Ithaca being in a room together is essentially not permitted. Are we asking them to clarify whether they've changed it? I have gone back and reread the New York State opens meeting law, and it goes on quite extensively and it's pretty specific. I've also gone back and looked at the state rulings to multiple legal challenges and cases that are already documented on the matter. So are we asking them to clarify whether they still stand behind the rulings that they've already made? Those are some specific items that come to mind. If we're going to ask the state to clarify,
not having language proposed, I'll move on to Tyke.
Yeah, when I saw this, honestly, I'm struggling with it from the standpoint that, I think of it's a feel-good resolution. Given what happened this year with this body alone, to me, that's exactly what it is. It's just to justify what happened. My father taught me a long time ago that if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. That's where I think the line should be drawn. I don't think we need clarification whatsoever for this. We know what's wrong. We know what's right. I've personally never been very comfortable with the caucusing idea at all. I mean, coming from a town board, this is something that never happened. It was a foreign entity to me coming here. So I from day one, honestly, I felt reservations about doing caucusing because I think we were discussing things that should have been an open public forum. So I think the rules are clear. I think that you know, we're looking for justification to bend them or change them a little bit, and I don't think that's right. So I won't support it.
Thank you, Tyke. I have Martha, then Jim.
I think anybody that worries that we're not debating issues enough in public doesn't watch our meetings. You know, we clearly are making decisions here. Certainly, as Mike Lane mentioned, that our budget process is commendable for the fact that we focus on tax levy. I'd also say the hours and hours of meetings and education by staff of us in front of the cameras that we have, certainly I'd put that up against the state's process any day. I think I'm going to support this. I think we really do the public's business in public, and I'm proud of that.
Jim Dennis.
I will support it. I've been to caucuses for 3 years on this legislature, and we don't take votes. We don't, and clearly, we have discussions, and and it doesn't work out because one only has to view what happened for the first couple of months of this legislature. And it's beyond me why any media would want us to do anything different, because we made front page news for 3 or 4 or 5 days. I think the real reason for caucuses, as far as I'm concerned, are 15 of us. We're not on every committee. You literally get yourself educated or educate other people about that. I've lived in this county since 1971, when the county legislature was run by the other guys, and the number was 11 to 4 or 12 to 3. Everyone had caucuses in those days. And this business got done. We had wonderful chairs, and they made great decisions. I think this county, we follow all those laws on the executive session, and we do our business here, unfortunately, always, and it extends the meeting. Then, without caucus discussion, I think the meetings would be 2 hours longer, and people would, the legislators would be less effective as the time goes on.
I'd like to proceed to the vote. I have Nathan, and then hopefully Kathy will be our final comment. Nathan?
Yeah, I just wanted to actually read the two whereases. One was the whereas that Mike Sigler had in his original resolution, and one was added in committee. So obviously the first one just introduces that the open meeting law was amended to exclude political caucuses in 1985. But the two whereases I want to read are, whereas political caucuses are an important and appropriate tool to deal with policies and priorities of political parties, but should not be used to make decisions on public issues. And whereas the Tompkins County Legislature firmly believes that public business should be considered and debated in public. I just want to make that clear that we are making that statement in that
Thank
this
you.
Resolution.
And Catherine Lucerera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This resolution is a sham. I've stopped going to caucus. It's clear to me that what some people think of as business as usual and appropriate way to conduct business, and what's been defended as that's just politics, is actually making deals. And members of this body have said to me that they think making deals for your vote is part of the political process, and intimidating others to vote the way that you want them to. And people on this body have told me that. Actually, we have in the past taken votes at caucus, and as a matter of fact, it was the lack of those votes going the way that people wanted them to go and had hoped that they would go that have led to this problem. This is, I think, an effort to pretend that everything's all right. I've been asking members of this body since January to get together to talk about the assumption, which I believe is unethical, that deals can be made for votes and that intimidation of someone for their vote is an appropriate political move, with no response. I can't support this, not because if a caucus is done properly, I would disapprove of it for all the reasons that were factual that people have stated, but because what we're doing here is a sham.
Are we ready to vote on Resolution J with a small wording change in the resolve? All in favor? And opposed?
That passes, I believe it's 12 to 4. 12 to 2, excuse me. Right? 12 to 2. Thank you very much. We're going to go back to the beginning of the agenda. And do people need a break before committee reports, or do they want to kind of move steadily through committee reports?
So,
I think people are taking breaks as they go along. Okay.
I'm sorry, do we have an executive session today?
We have a brief executive session for negotiations. Right. And we're going to have a small item under unfinished business regarding performance evaluation of director reports if we have the energy. Budget, Capital, and Finance Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. I'm looking for Resolution H. Appropriation from contingent fund City of Ithaca Municipal Sales Tax Agreement, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Mike Hattery seconds. Is there discussion? Ready to vote? This is a short roll call vote.
Ms. Chuck?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as a no vote? Thank you. That's unanimous. There's no other report from your committee. We'll move on.
Let me just say one thing. The vice chair of the committee, Joe Mariana, already told you when the retreat was at 6:45, and I really appreciate that help. And we will. The next meeting is Monday afternoon at 3:30, and that concludes my report.
You'll have some preview of the discussion at the budget retreat?
No. I'm sorry, on Monday?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
The committee will be making a determination, hopefully, on what the
recommendation?
The level will be. And
a recommendation?
The recommendation to the retreat.
Okay.
On the levy.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll move on to Public Safety Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you. We met yesterday, and a very full agenda. I'll just pick a couple things out. The sheriff reported on a program with the highway division. Bill Sesney suggested, and they've been able to make this work, that they're going to start a work release initiative, taking a couple of inmates, carefully selected, and then trained, to actually work with the highway crews this summer. And so far, two people are selected. They'll be applicants who otherwise don't have employment waiting for them when they come out. So this will help them get skills, build a resume, and if they work out, Bill says he might even hire them when they get out. So thanks to the two department heads for really working together, and to Sesney for his initiative on that. Committee's been talking about evaluation of programs and trying to get our hands around criminal justice data that we have in our system. And at the suggestion of Greg Potter, and together with Kim Moore and Marsha Lynch, and led by Anita Fitzpatrick, the department heads in the justice system, plus Patricia Carey and DSS, got together and pulled together something you've never seen before. Application overview of all the applications that are used by our criminal justice departments. Some 20 different programs that are used, and there's the map. That's kind of what it looks like. And I swear,
different kinds of data collection software.
Data collection software. I think if you're going to be in the sheriff's department, you need more IT training than firearms training, by the looks of this. I found this very interesting. The committee was interested, and I think this is going to be a great start for us to try to understand what questions we have to figure out. What questions we want to ask. This will help us figure out where to find the information. And I've met with Kim and Greg, and they have a lot of ideas about sort of moving forward with that to better coordinate all these programs and try to make more rational the way we manage data in the criminal justice system. I will say that ITS, the public safety component of ITS of their job seems to grow every year, and it's very important, but it's also a very, very big part of what they do. Susie Cook reported from the Criminal Justice Advisory Committee meeting that Judge Rossiter of the City Drug Court had been at their previous meeting, and just a quick snapshot, she reported on City Drug Court since she took it over in 2006. They now have between 30 and 40 active participants at any time. That's up from about 18 or 20 previously. They're getting almost twice as many referrals from outlying courts, and 80% of participants are from Tompkins County. So I would say everybody is in agreement that that program is really going well at this point. We had good discussion on the Rockefeller drug laws. I know you may remember as part of the state budget process, there was reform of the drug laws that was passed. The state actually looked at everybody who's currently in prison and retroactive to sentencing in January 2005. They calculated how many people would be eligible for sort of resentencing within under the new Rockefeller laws, or under the reformed laws. It boils down to about 10 people in Tompkins County currently in state prison. They have the opportunity to be resentenced. Now, that sounds like a small number, but every one of those will probably need to go back to court, need assigned counsel, very likely need additional supervision from probation. And we have to see what happens with that. That's for people currently in prison. In the future, there's a good chance that that we will be seeing more costs, especially in probation supervision, related to these reforms. We're trying to get information. There was kind of a little sentence in the state's news reports about this, that the state was going to add funding for probation and treatment programs. Pat Michelle can't find any more than that, like one sentence in the news report, so we're trying to find out if there's really any money in the budget. I'm not sure there is. And finally, texting while driving. We had a lively conversation about this. And I will say that there were serious concerns about enforcing it. District attorney said that since this is not a state law, she will not prosecute such tickets. So it would only be enforced by drug court through the justice courts. So I will say there's quite a bit of pushback on this. Patricia Carey came up with probably the best idea for the day of a public education program instead, perhaps in the same way as sort of smoking and seatbelt laws, that sort of thing, benefits from public education. And at this moment, Alice Cole said she is intrigued by the idea of a traffic safety grant for this purpose. So we're going to sort of pursue that angle, which we could do even if there is a law. And I certainly invite the resolution come back to the committee next month. But I'll tell you that we heard some kind of negative stuff from the staff.
Yeah.
Nathan Shinigawa.
My response to that is that I think it's great that you guys talked about that and also doing an awareness campaign, because I think the biggest problem with this is that there's a lot of distraction things where most people know it's not a good idea to do it while they're driving, like reading a book or reading the newspaper. The problem is that there's a lot of social acceptance of texting while driving. You know, I mean, I think polls have shown, you know, the numbers have gone up, way up. But, you know, something like a vast majority, like more than two-thirds of young people between 19 and 25 do it regularly while they're driving. And so there's just acceptance of it. And so whether it's a law that says, hey, this is not acceptable and there's fines levied against you if you're caught doing it, or if there's an awareness campaign telling people that, I mean, I think either way we just need to really set get that message out there that it's not acceptable to do this and that you put other people's lives in danger.
Yeah, the real trouble with enforcement is that, you know, you can see somebody's holding a cell phone up. That's what the law is. That's how they can identify. But, you know, if you're looking down, they can't tell what you're doing.
Either
so there's really...
Sleep or texting.
Yeah. And it's not against the law to sleep while you drive. So
Actually,
it is. Is it? Yeah. Okay.
We're going to outlaw it during committee meetings.
Damn, I'm going to have to start waking up while I drive. Anyway, so stay tuned. Next month will be interesting. That's May 18th. And... I don't have any resolutions or anything.
Martha will send you a text message.
Yeah. Okay.
So we will postpone the report from Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee until our next meeting. Legislative Rules and Procedures Committee, Julie Kiefer, Chair.
We met yesterday,
And Paula Younger and Jonathan Wood joined us for that meeting. Paula reported that at the previous department head meeting, they expressed interest in sending us comments on Rule 17, which is the rule that was singled out to be handed out at the department head and legislative retreat. That's the one that deals with legislators communicating with and asking for information from staff. So I think that's great. We would like to get, our committee would love to get comments from department heads on that rule and any others, and Paula is going to coordinate that. But we still haven't had any input from legislators. We asked you all to read the rules and tell us which ones you have questions about or would like to see changed, and the silence is deafening. So I'm going to report on one particular rule tonight, and maybe it will inspire you. We talked about Rule 2, which is quorum, which is pretty simple. We know what the numbers are, but it's a three-paragraph rule, and paragraphs 2 and 3 actually deal with compelling attendance of members to regular and special meetings of the legislature and to committee meetings. And there, we are allowed to fine members up to $50 for each absence not deemed necessary, and the power to okay an excuse as necessary is given to the chair of the legislature. We have not been following these rules. In fact, over the last decade, we've really moved away from what our rules say in this regard. So the committee has two choices. We can keep what's there and try to make you all take this seriously, or we can get rid of some of this language, and then we'll be left with what? Just leaving it up to the good sense of legislators to show up for meetings. One of us came up with a possible other idea, that is, we could ask the legislature clerk to receive calls, communications from legislators to let her know ahead of time when you can't attend, and we could ask her to keep a log of the reasons that you give for not attending. The only reason to do that would be to let constituents know in the future if they want to see about individual legislators' attendance records. Of course, any information of that sort should not be made available if it regards an absence from town, because we don't want to alert burglars. But it's an interesting rule to discuss, the quorum and how it should be enforced, if at all. So think about that. Look at our rules, and please give us some feedback.
Thank you, Dooley. Questions, Kathy Lou Cervera?
So how would HIPAA come into play on that?
Health information is privileged.
So if someone was...
And so at the moment, if the legislator calls the office and says, I can't come, and they may say why, for medical reasons or not, I don't know, they're having an operation, whatever. At the moment, that communication is made, but no record is kept of it. And that's fine. At the moment, the chair is supposed to be getting that information and saying, yes, that's an absolutely legitimate excuse, and the absence is deemed okay. But at the moment, nothing is really happening about that. I'm not saying we're going to keep a log of them. I'm just saying we can discuss things like this at the Rules Committee.
Well, actually, this is encouraging, because some of us who have had health issues have had to put up with discussions about our lack of attendance at meetings without the opportunity of being able to, or necessarily being required to, reveal our mm-hmm. particular health issues. So it might be a relief, because the swipes that have been going on in attempts to take people's place on various committees without really any merit, especially when someone's disability for health reasons is covered, protected by law, have been sort of discouraging to me. So it might be possible that it would be an improvement over the current situation.
Mike, well, if you want to think about that and put something in writing, suggest us something, that would be great.
Mike Hattery.
Being a member of this committee that Dooley chairs, the way I view this is that we have a current practice that is unlike what is in the board rules. Mm-hmm. We could adjust the rules to be more in line with the practice, or we could basically, if it was the will of the body, we could say we're going to go in line with the existing rules or some variation. I think the current practice is best characterized as we contact the legislative office if we are not going to be at a meeting, and that serves a very good purpose of making sure that the legislative office knows whether we're close to having a quorum or not, or if it's threatened, or how many people are going to be at the meeting. I think that's the main thing that's going on now, is we just know whether or not we're going to have a quorum. And I think I would be happy if we just instituted the current practice as the rule. But, you know, everybody's ideas are welcome, as usual.
This was given as one example to encourage our participation to send comments to the committee not debated tonight. I have Frank Proto briefly, and then Martha Robertson.
Just to go back to something Nathan was reporting on, one of the items that we'll be taking up at the committee is the use of cell phones and texting at these meetings.
All right. And Martha?
Your committee meets at the same time as public safety.
It does.
So it'd be helpful if, you know, most committees always have the material in the backup material in the packet. I think the last agenda said like Rule 2 will be discussed. If just that page in the rule book could be attached to the agenda, then that'll, you know, help us kind of know ahead of time what the issue is. And
we are going through the rules number one till the end, and we don't know how long each meeting is going to last. We don't know which ones will be taken, but you all have copies of the rules.
I know. I'm just suggesting if you'd like to stimulate engagement, mm-hmm. it would help if you'd Xerox a page or two out of the rules that this is where we're starting for the day, and especially for those of us who can't possibly get to your meeting, then that would be helpful for me. Anyway, so.
Thank you, Dooley. That was a good advertisement for engagement. We're moving on to Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
We could always Xerox. See how old I am? We could always photocopy the minutes.
You can mimeograph it, too.
Yes, you could. whether you have the appropriate ink or not. The Health Committee met not too long ago on the 16th. On the 14th. And some of the items that we talked about, I just want to highlight we concentrated mostly by department on the effects of the state budget on the various areas. The Health and Human Services, I beg your pardon, the Human Services Coalition reported that, I won't go into the 211 discussion because enough of that has been played out publicly and certainly has been discussed for clarification. But according to Kathy Slaughter, most of the agencies are going to be funded at the same level as they were in 2007. There are slight adjustments, $1,000 to $2,000, but she didn't seem to think that it was going to be devastating to anyone. However, the program that took the biggest hit, as you already learned, is 211 to the tune of about $80,000. We did get through some of the items for the Office for the Aging. The largest hit to the Office for the Aging was the $50,000 on the long-term care educational outreach program. That has not been restored, and the concern there that was expressed at the committee is that in these times of when people need to be wending their way through the booklets that are coming to them regarding selecting long-term care, they still need a guide. and there will still be some of that going on at Lifelong, but unfortunately we won't have the money to have somebody prepare a lot of the initiatives here and a lot of the help. Lisa reported that the RAP money was restored. The $10,000 that Senator Winter had set aside had been restored, and that's going into the home repair program, which was very good news. Of course, we had a report from Nancy Zeller. A lot of the discussion, I know some of this perhaps is going on in the Public Safety Committee as well, because some of the programs overlap. Nancy's still a little pensive about the cuts in some of the state allocations. The COPS program, some of that was restored, some of it was not, and we're still trying to wend our way through that. Again, most of the discussion at the committee was with regard to the effects of the state budget. I want to avoid doing that. The health department is setting the stage for naming some of the conference rooms, and the committee addressed those. I would, while it was not done in executive session, I think it would be appropriate to let the resolution work its way through the appropriate other committees. I think, Nathan, it has to come to your committee before the announcement, any announcement is made, because I think it would spoil the effect and the honor that some of the people will be paid once the announcements are made. The next committee meeting is in May, and we're looking forward to a very active meeting on the 29th, because a lot of our budgets, including DSS, it's not going to be an easy year next year. Where everyone's taken to heart Joe's comments about funding, and we're doing our best to keep not only the departments but the agencies at least, I almost said whole, but at least protect them from devastating effects right now. But all bets are off for next year, apparently, because we simply don't know. The next committee meeting is May 12th, 3:30. If any of you would like to attend, please come. Oh, there is, you know, there's one other thing, and I neglected to announce it under a privilege of the floor. The Office for the Aging's annual luncheon is May 13th. You all have received a flyer on it. If you have an interest in going, please get back to the department to make a reservation. May 13th.
Thank you, Frank. I see no hands for questions. Move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Kathy Lou Herrera, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to start out by stating unequivocally and for the record that the rumors that Leslyn McBean Claiborne has relocated permanently to New Orleans to head up a construction crew are not true. As a matter of fact, she has told me she has a newfound respect for construction workers after doing insulation and drywall, and she's eager to get back to her regular tasks. I've got for you right now some highlights from the meeting that took place on the 16th of April. And at that meeting, we passed Resolution B, which was on the consent agenda but was asked to be removed. And I'll start out with that. It's Resolution B, authorizing a reimbursable agreement with the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, to allow for the relocation of Runway 32 Localizer Array, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And I so move.
Seconded by Tyke Randall. Are there questions? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I pulled this off. I just wanted to know a little bit more about what a localizer array is. And then I wanted to have some more information about relocation. I know there's been, you know, issues depending on the size of a localizer array and what that is and what the current location of that is and what the new location of it would be. There have been questions about locations of other items at the airport, the lights and the some of the other features of the airport update, which I generally support. And I just wanted to make sure that this wasn't something that we should be finding out if area residents would have questions about or have had a chance, whether they've had a chance to weigh in, if it's something that's larger than a small piece that's being relocated?
I'll be happy to tell you what I remember from the meeting in the layman's terms that I remember it. In the past, we moved this, and we moved it according to what we hoped the FAA would approve. It was consistent with what they had accepted at the Binghamton Airport, and it was a more cost-effective distance of movement. And the way I understand it, a localizer array is a way of helping the planes get guided to where they know where they're going. But the FAA has required that ours be longer because they've changed their requirements and it has to be longer. But we didn't move it far enough because they didn't agree that the distance that we hoped and thought that they would, because they had indicated that they would, but they wouldn't put it in writing, they didn't do it, so we had to move it again. But it's still, we were trying to save money, and I think we still ended up saving some money, and that's the best I can do for you on that. I do know that, as far as I can tell you, it's not an impact to the environment or something that local residents would be concerned about. At least I got no word of that at the meeting. I am sure I can get a technical response for you, but it won't be right now.
Thank you, Carol. Ready to vote on Resolution B from the consent agenda? All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Any I could give just a brief report,
sure,
if you don't mind. The big news of the meeting was the Alternative Fuel Consortium. We got some great press on that. The launch of Alternative Fuels Consortium was announced on the 16th, and we had 17 municipalities, Cornell University, Ithaca College, TCAT, and the county school districts and fire departments agreeing to join this consortium for the purchase and use of biodiesel where appropriate. That's a big coup for our community. You know, we talk a lot about collaboration. It's easier said than done, and I think that everybody involved in this, not just the county players, but the people throughout the community that worked so hard to make this happen, deserve some thanks for this. And the thing is, we'll be cutting our carbon footprint. It'll make us reach our goals faster, and I think that it's an excellent... Well, you know, earlier Frank talked about the solar panels and the payback period on it. Sometimes we're approached by folks in the business community saying that if we'll undertake something, we'll increase the demand for it, and that will drive prices down. I think this is a really good example of a way that we're doing that as a community, but it's a cost-effective way, and it's a way that I think is going, because we got huge, for example, soybean crops around here, and they're used as feed, and in some ways the biodiesel can be used as, I don't know, it can be part of the manufacturing and the byproducts. That's another technical thing, but just want to say I'm excited. The county got confirmation on two projects for funding from the stimulus program, Warren Road and Pine Tree Road Enhancement. These projects will be fully funded by the federal government, words that we like to hear, fully funded. The county got another letter from the state court system about the use of the space currently occupied for the county office for the aging. The county, as you all know, is doing a space study, but the state has threatened financial sanctions if they don't get adequate space for its needs. The county administrator, commissioner of planning and public works, sorry if I'm putting words in your mouth, and facilities director are working on a response. The concern is that in the present economic situation, it might be difficult to provide everything that's being requested. A copy of this letter was provided to each of you. Speaking of biofuel, there's grants being applied for regarding the use from it. One is from NYSERDA to reimburse any additional expense in using the biofuel. The other grant application would provide funding to convert the smaller vehicles in the highway fleet to natural gas or propane. Initial estimates indicate use of biofuel will allow us to get our five-year goal. Oh, I said that. In cutting emissions, estimates of reductions of emissions by using propane are 20 to 28% reductions of emissions. We discussed this at the committee. It's still something that I think is under discussion. Congressman Arcuri sent us a letter requesting transportation projects within his district. How often can you brag about that? That could be funded through funds he has available. There's a short window, but there might be some projects that fit this criteria, including Red Mill Bridge. The town of Dryden would like to utilize the existing historical bridge as part of a footpath in Freeville. Other projects that may fit are Phase 2 of Ellis Hollow Road and Peruville Road, and there are other bridge projects that could be submitted. We got a presentation on the Health Department building project, which is progressing. There's alternatives to the parking lot area, outside lighting and landscaping. The committee reviewed the plan brought forward by the Health Department Building Committee, and we're hoping that it'll come in favorably due to the decrease in the cost of petroleum products. The committee had requested a review of the Hanshaw Road project, and we were given some materials and had a discussion about that. It was noted that right-of-way work would be conducted by the Department of Transportation consultant because there are considerations that need to be met as a result of the litigation regarding right-of-way for Coddington Road. The majority of the work wouldn't require special handling, but the need to review all easements required, or we thought it best, and were advised by our county attorney that an outside firm assist. The walkways would vary in width due to the planning component, and there was a discussion regarding residents' viewpoints on the sidewalks. Resident Bernie Hutchins attended the meeting, and he expressed his belief that the majority of impacted individuals are still opposed. If y'all don't have any questions, well, I'll tell you this anyway. We're going to meet again on May 21st at 3:30.
Frank Proto has a question.
I just want to add something to what Kathy said regarding the space need in the courthouse. You know that the discussions in moving COFA, there's been ongoing discussions with Lifelong about establishing a cohabitation area. It was asked at the Health Committee, what's the status of Lifelong's fundraising, because that was one of the major concerns, and it plays into what Kathy was just describing. We're supposed to hear in June how they're proceeding with their fundraising efforts, because it was a sizable amount of money. And that might help with the decision to move COFA out of the courthouse.
Thank you, Frank. I think I saw Dooley's hand.
Yes, just a very small thing, Kathy. We did get news about the two stimulus grants, but the Pine Tree Road one with the walkways is an enhancement grant, so it isn't 100%. It's close, but there is a small local share.
Is that a 95.5?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for the correction. I was sort of winging it.
Ready to move on? Thank you very much, Kathy. Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee, you've passed your resolutions, but you have a report.
Yep, I'll try to be somewhat brief. We had a update from the Board of Elections. Frank, you had requested that that they come to our committee to update us on this year's elections, and so they did. They talked about how implementation of the new voting machines and how it's up to a judge right now whether or not they're going to still use the lever machines and just have and with supplement with the voting machines, which is I think the preference at this point. But the judge very well and has in other areas actually said to implement it across an entire county. And so we're still waiting to hear. Also, the Board of Elections is looking into, though, doing some pilot districts, so choosing maybe a few districts like, you know, in the city of Ithaca, let's say, and have them use the new voting machines, but then still have the rest of the county using lever and phase that in. And so they'll be discussing that. If we have to go to full implementation of the new machines, we have technicians now at the Board of Elections that are trained and doing a great job and working hard, and so we'll do the best that we can to accommodate that, should that be the case. Also, with these new machines, one of the concerns is privacy, because, you know, you're filling out these forms. So the Board of Elections is looking into different solutions that are out there to make sure that people maintain their privacy when they're filling out their forms that are going to be used for the optical scan. We also had a discussion about equal pay legislation. Dooley brought this up, and we're actually going to. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it, but we'll explore it more in our future G Power meetings. Joe unveiled the social quarterly, the quarterly social and economic indicators report, and that was that got a lot of good press. I think it was talked a lot about in the Ithaca Journal. Thank you to the Ithaca Journal for that, and also on WHCU and other places. And really, this is our overall kind of powerful management tool to understand trends and key areas in which we need to watch out for and try to understand. And so, for example, the high number of there's certain red areas that we need to look at, like the higher utilization of foster care numbers. But there's also good things like lower jail lower board outs, amounts of board outs, and also higher employments, let's say, at the airport. discussed. Let's see, what else? We are updating our policies. We were thinking about looking at 12 policies at the next meeting, but we might cut that down. But basically, we're going through all the different policies, the dozens and dozens of policies that haven't been updated in many cases, I think in most cases, in decades. And so we'll be going through that process. It will be the most riveting and exciting part of every single meeting. And I'm looking forward to it too, because after dealing with salaries and caucus resolutions and the Employee Free Choice Act, we need something equally as exciting like administrative policies. Let's see, what else do I have here? I'm gonna stop there. I think that's about it. If anybody has any questions, let me know.
Thank you for those highlights. I see no hands, so we'll move on to Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee. Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you. We met on April 8th. We had an annual report from the Ag and Farm Protection Board. Monica Roth came and spoke with us. She presented some interesting statistics that the actual number of size and number of farms have not changed in the last year, but there has been an increase. This is from in 2007. The market value of production has gone from $41,908,000 to $60,185,000 in 2007. It was in 2002, so in 5 years. She said that although there's been an increase, the market is now down. The largest items are dairy, followed by field crops. She said that the report, they are doing more work with individuals starting farming operations as well, which means that there are people who are we have some new farmers. It was noted that one of the largest organic dairies in New York is in Tompkins County. And that the number of farms has been pretty stable. On May 7th, there will be a training session for municipal officials on planning for agriculture to provide tools to promote and protect agriculture. Among the items in the commissioner's report, he said that the appraiser for the big building has been contracted with. The appraisal will be completed as separate parcels to best determine what to do with the property, and that will happen within the next 2 months. There will be discussions with the town of Ithaca to determine their interest and concerns about what is going to happen to that area. And then finally, we had a report from the Visitors Bureau. Fred Bond came, and he said that there was a 19.7% drop in January from this year from last year in tourism and in Tompkins County. The national report, there was actually a greater decline of 21%. And that is all that is essential to report. Thank you.
Question before Resolution L. Frank?
It's a clarification of something that Carol had asked or mentioned before regarding the tourism board. I don't suspect it came up during the committee meeting, but you'd asked about when the celebrations money became part of the tourism block of funding. Originally, that money was a separate line item in the county budget. And the committee that Barbara Mink Stu Stein and I served on recommended that that be changed. And Stu actually was the person that took it to the tourism board to include with that so that the monies would come out of the tourism fund. And it was met with unanimous support by this board at that time. And to clarify something Jim said, I don't think the Republicans ever had a 12-3 majority on this board. Certainly not as long as...
They never did?
Certainly not as long as I've served.
Well, what was it, 10-5?
But best I remember was 9-6.
All nine. Oh, I'm sorry.
But if you want to help us this coming election season, it's okay, Jim.
Thank you. There's no further comments. So we're ready to move on to Resolution L, which was added to the agenda. Pam?
I'd like to move this resolution declaring May 2nd, 2009 as Green Grand Prix Day in Tompkins County.
And duly keeper seconds. Is there discussion? Jim Dennis.
I'm not going to support this because it's way too quiet.
All right. And Greg Stevenson.
Way too quiet. I'm very confused. We're not offering any advice whether these folks should be texting or not while they're driving. I don't know if we should really go here. We could be liable. It looks bad.
Okay. Any further comments? Are you ready to vote? All in favor of declaring May 2nd as Green Grand Prix Day, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? One opposed. Mike Hattery.
Two
opposed. Okay. You get those? All right.
Mike?
Yes, Julie.
As Pam said, this was in response to a request from a Schuyler County legislator, but part of the rest of his request was to urge some of our legislators to sign up and participate.
Yes. Which you've done before in the past.
Yes. Oh,
can we bring our alternative fuel vehicles to this? My diesel truck?
You could ride a horse.
Or my horse, one of the horses.
We have minutes, and we have a small bit of unfinished business, and we have executive session. Who'd like to move the minutes of April 7th?
Move them.
Frank Proto moves them. Martha seconds. Any questions or changes? All in favor?
Aye.
And are there any opposed? That passed unanimously. Unfinished business. Our last meeting, we were going to discuss evaluation of our four legislative direct reports. That's Joe Mariani, Kathy Culver, Jonathan Wood, and David Squires. We're not actually talking about the evaluation itself. We're talking about the process. I've spoken with Jonathan about this, and we can speak in general terms about this in open session. If we stray into the process discussion affecting certain traits of individuals, we have to go into executive session. But I did send out a brief survey to all legislators after our last meeting, since we didn't have time to attend to this. And there were five questions, four of which were fairly clear-cut in terms of the responses. I can give people the responses if they want. Frank, I guess you can for legislators. Essentially, the first question was, are we ready to move forward with this instrument generally? And as a base product, the answer was yes. There were certainly differences of opinion about whether it would add any other values, so we have to talk about that either tonight or later night. The second question was, would people be willing to serve on an initial review panel? And there were seven people who were willing to serve. Five were not. And we did not address the question of whether we would have more than one review panel. So we have to take that up either tonight or a later date. The third question was, should we start with Joe? Because it's his six-month review period, and we promised that when we hired him. And 11 people said yes, and one person had a qualifying. You can read the comments, but basically it was unanimously yes, let's start with Joe. I think the comment was essentially alluding to let's do them all at once, not necessarily single out Joe. There was the fourth question regarding time frame for the others, and people were equally split about when others should be reviewed for their performance evaluation. And then the final question, should we give orientation to legislative direct reports about what will be expected of them in the evaluation process? And that was almost unanimous that yes, we should let them go through the same orientation that we have, so they have the same expectations about self-evaluation and the kinds of questions and categories and procedures they'll be asked of. It's a very quick overview. So the two areas which we should discuss further, and I'd like to consider maybe 10-minute discussion, and if we go well beyond that, we'll have to kind of take a little park and maybe come back a different time or figure out a different strategy for doing this. But the two questions would be, on question one, do we want to add any other values to the instrument that we saw in our orientation? I think 12 out of 15 of us had an orientation about that instrument and that process. And the second question is, will we have more than one review panel initially? So let's begin discussion on the first question about are there other categories or other values we want to evaluate our direct reports on, and we would have to vote on this or proceed as a group. Kathy?
Actually, I think there's a question before that, and that is what's the process of adding other values? The fact is values are very difficult to measure, and the core of the core performance evaluation is coming up with measurables, things that you can measure rather than have a subjective response to. As has been demonstrated in the past months, ethics is somewhat subjective, and measurables for that have not even been discussed by us, and that has not even been agreed to. I believe that if we go into the realm of values, such as ethics, we could be processing this for a long time. I do not believe that it is appropriate for where we're at now with all the work that we've been doing on this core performance that we add something as difficult to measure that we do not have consensus on as ethics or really any value until we have had a chance to deal with some of our own values issues.
One suggestion that came up in conversation, people didn't necessarily give me the comments electronically or returning the form, was let's try the initial instrument. It will be iterative, and we will improve it as we go along, so that in a second round or a yearly annual review process, we would notice there may be some categories we want to measure and add those in subsequent years. So that would be a different way to proceed. Further discussion about adding a category or a value for performance evaluation to what we've already discussed in orientation. I see Carol, and then Dooley, and then Martha.
I see my initials up here as having responding, but I don't see some of my comments that I offered reflected in here. And one of them, first of all, I'll lead in with a question. I'm not entirely sure where we stand procedurally in adopting. Was there a formal procedure for adopting the questions and the direct report procedure as that we have now that we're talking about?
No, we're doing that. We're doing that tonight. Very first question is, do we have consensus that this is an initial instrument to attempt our performance evaluation? We've been lax in this for 10 years. I've been on the legislature, actually 11, and we're trying to have a standard process. And so that would be the vote tonight.
Okay. As somebody who attended both sessions at which we were trained and went over the questions, we're calling them questions, items,
the categories.
Categories as they are. I heard fairly unanimous support from a larger group. Well, anyway, fairly unanimous support from the whole first group about needing to add some item about integrity and ethics, not as with our staff, with our reports, not necessarily as here's we're dictating what they are, but as an ongoing discussion as the other items are about what's important to us, what's important to them as we evaluate performance. And then I heard another set of people at the second session talk about that being an important item to add, and that we not proceed with a performance evaluation review tool that didn't include that. Again, not as necessarily a set here dictating here's what they are, but it's an ongoing discussion about what integrity is and what our ethics are, and that we bring back, and the whole thing is an iterative process. But it does raise the question for me: if we use the procedure to accept this as the tool, then that's the same procedure we should use to amend it. I'm not aware that we had any formal adoption of
no,
that.
We only had orientation as to the proposal. This is the first conversation we've had whether to begin to use it, and we can amend it before using it, or we can use it and then amend it. I think Paula can speak to it, but I think part of the idea was, it will not be perfect. It will be evolving, and we may want to use something and then amend it in subsequent years. But I have Dooley,
okay,
and then.
Well, I prefer to see the addition of that item, since it isn't something we formally adopted, but it is something that I heard a pretty overwhelming majority of people wanting to add. I'd want to see that added.
Okay, Dooley.
Well, I was hoping that maybe Paula had gone through her files and found what wording, if any, had been in there in one of the early drafts, or what comments were made during discussions of the early drafts that would help formulate something that included something about integrity. Have I used enough some things to make it really vague? The concept that Carol was mentioning, that many people felt that integrity was an important value for us, and that needs to be reflected somewhere in this tool, is what I heard also when I attended. And I agree with Kathy, it's a very hard thing to measure, but the importance of conveying that as a quality we want in staff is what's at least as important. So I'm not sure the best way to do it, and I think it's important for us to undertake these reviews sooner rather than later. So if we have to start with what we have now, I think it's a usable tool,
okay.
And I think it can be improved. And I guess I think one of the things that we could do is explore with the people we're going to be meeting with,
okay,
their attitudes rather than anything else.
Okay, that's fine. Martha? And then I'll have a proposal on how to move it forward.
I was at the first one, out of town for the second meeting, and it was unanimous. I think there were seven of us at the first meeting. And yes, it seemed odd that there wasn't something about integrity. And it occurs to me, if you're evaluating somebody, and let's say there's it's hard to imagine this happening, but if there's a breach of integrity later on and you're evaluating somebody and they, if there's nothing in there, they, I would think, have the right to say, well, that wasn't in the, I wasn't evaluated. That wasn't part of the standards. That wasn't, you didn't ask that honesty be part of my job performance. So maybe, as we're a political body, somebody can say, well, there were political forces and encouraged. Look at what happens in Chicago. I mean, it just seems a real gap. If there's nothing about integrity and honesty, I don't think it. I don't see it as needing to hold up the process. I think we can go about, starting to schedule the panels and all that while we come up with language. I'm sure the committee can do something with that. I just think it really needs to be there.
Okay, so I've heard a more specific proposal from Dooley, a little bit by resonating that Martha said, to start now, possibly adapt as we go along, because we do not have the actual wording for any new category or value tonight to be voting on. Are people okay with that, or do they want us to task a subgroup with that wording, or Paula, who led us through, Kathy, and then Pam?
because I believe that this body has issues with regard to integrity that came up recently, I believe that if we are going to consider adding a value like integrity, we should also consider adding other values. So, understanding that it sounds to me as though people are suggesting we go ahead with the wording as it is, I can agree with that, only with the understanding that additional values would not be limited to ethics, that we might also consider adding other values, and that we have a process that is democratic for allowing suggestion of other values and voting on them, and this is the most important part, that we have suggestions about how these values be measurable.
Okay. And Pam.
I am in favor of us moving forward and doing these evaluations as fast as we can. I do not think we should be delaying any longer. I think that there are things that probably are sure need to be added, but let's just do this. This is torture.
Yes,
it's been going on way longer than I've been on the legislature, so let's do it.
It's been at least 2 years in proposal and finally the orientation. Jim Dennis.
I agree that we should move on. The integrity issue, it sounds like, you know, we're being asked to resolve our own ethics and integrity issues, and I don't agree with that, but my sense is we should move on and do the best we can with what we have. And knowing full well, if having not done this before, that there will be some changes and tweaks to the whole thing. I thought the whole process was pretty good, and there's a lot of meat in the process, and we just need to lay this on someone.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on that? That we're ready to go with the instrument, knowing that there will have to be developed a process for adding categories in the future? Martha?
No, I...
Are you ready to vote on it? You may disagree with that, but are you ready to vote on it?
I'm not sure I understand how you've just framed that. I think I would be prepared to vote to accept the instrument impending inclusion of a rating system on integrity to be developed by a subcommittee. And maybe brought to G-Power, whatever.
Well, that was not what I suggested. I suggested start with the system, and then we could have government performance and workforce relations suggest a process for adapting the instrument going forward.
Okay, then I'm going to suggest that maybe we do this question number two first, which is decide how many panels there would be, and start to get those set up, ask volunteers, start the schedule. That'll take us a while. And then understand that the process is going to go ahead. And then at the same time, ask for a deadline within a week, whoever it is, come back. Paula and three people come back with language for a rating on integrity.
Some
of us don't want language for a rating.
Yeah, the question about procedure.
And a lot of us do, so we want to vote on that.
Well, the question about procedure of changing the instrument has not been determined yet. So we would send that to Government Performance Workforce Relations. Right now, we have an instrument. We've not actually discussed among 15 people how to amend the instrument, but I'm hearing some will to at least start with the present instrument and discuss further.
The first meeting we had, I don't know, was at least a month ago, and seven of us asked that a draft language on integrity be developed.
Right, but saying it three times in a row doesn't make it so. We don't have a procedure for amending it. That was one orientation session.
Actually, we have been, as was said, meeting on this for several years now, and the key component of performance evaluation is measurables. And to have at the last minute a core group of people decide to hijack the process and delay it by adding an unmeasurable that we can't even agree on ourselves, like ethics.
This was in the original.
Yeah, we are at 10 minutes. Can we vote on using the existing instrument, and I'll move on to question two regarding.
I'm not going to support it.
That's not what we asked for.
If we're going to vote on adopting this, then I would like to amend the resolution to
Paula?
Add. I'd like to offer an amendment that an element be added
related to integrity and ethics.
I would like to second that second? And note that it was in the original proposal from Paula. This is not at all at the last minute. It's been in the committee a number of times.
I'm not privy to what you're going to say. So.
No, I just wanted to provide a little bit of clarity here, and because, as many of you have already said, there's been a lot of history here, at least for me. It's been 2 years in the making, and we started out with the actual performance categories before we even began to build a process around it. So I wanted to make sure that everybody's clear on this, and I realize with this amount of time that has transpired, it's probably hard to remember how this all started. And in fact, there was a question about integrity from the very first session, the very first orientation session for legislators. And I did respond to that in some of the very earlier versions when we started developing the performance categories, we had integrity combined, like it said, integrity / accountability. And I apologize at this point that I should have brought all of my files with me on this one, and I just wasn't expecting to have to go down memory lane here. But I did respond to the first session with regard to that item around integrity. And I thought that what we said that we were going to do is allow this pilot process to take place, that as discussions that might come up that lead to the area of integrity evolve, we would take documentation of that, and that we would go back and make revisions to these performance categories accordingly. I just might add that even though you're talking about integrity at this point, I've also heard terminology used in terms of ethics and honesty, and there's some significant differences there. And so that was also part of the reason why I said, let's move forward with the pilot. Let these conversations evolve, and then you'll be able to make better decisions around changing some of that terminology. The only other thing I wanted to add is that we do have a rating category that's also complementary to, or I'm sorry, a rating scale that's also complementary to the categories that are already listed, those performance categories.
Thank you for the history. We have a proposal to essentially adopt what Paula has just said, and we have an amendment about that now. So let's discuss the amendment. Do we want to tonight amend the going forward to having some wording added around integrity, ethics, and honesty? Martha.
I'm sorry, Bruce Estes isn't here. Well, Tim is here. Right? Okay. This is so core. I think it's been, as Paul said, it's been part of the discussion from the beginning. The fact that we don't have specific language right now. Actually, there were several versions. There is draft language. I think a couple, three people could sit together and bring something concrete to the next GO meeting. And bring that forward. It is, as far as other values, if other values need to be brought in, I haven't seen any suggestions. So certainly those should be entertained, but, we need to know what those suggestions would be. At this point, this is something that's been suggested since the very first.
Okay, so we're moving towards adopting what Paul has proposed. Thank you for summarizing both the history and what might work to go forward. I have Kathy, Mike Sigler, and Pam.
I relish these discussions, and I'll support this.
Okay, and Mike Sigler.
Well, I mean, I certainly don't mind if Nathan wants to take this up, but I'm willing to leave it in Nathan's hands, frankly. I mean, that's kind of like what he would do. But I also want to make the statement is, if we're going to do that kind of evaluation on ethics, I would think you'd want that to pertain to the whole organization and not just these four people. So,
No.
I mean, I look at this as much bigger.
We're responsible for four as at least an initial rollout. We can talk about evaluation of all employees. We have talked about that, and we'll continue to talk about that. But I understand your point. Pam.
I would just like to point out that this would not be the first time that ethics has been brought up. I mean, I remember when we were in the hiring process for the county administrator, we spent a lot of time talking about ethics and values and what people cared about. So it's like this is just what's been going on in the last 6 months. How's it going? What are you doing? What goals do you have? Where do you need help? And what can we do to help you? I mean, I don't. This is devolving into some insane discussion. Let's just vote on it.
Okay, so I think, are we ready to vote on the amendment to adapt the instrument before accepting it.
I'm in favor of insanity.
All in favor of amending the instrument that was presented in orientation by some eventual wording regarding ethics and integrity.
No. You're confusing my... Carol's... I'm sorry.
That was Carol's amendment, and Martha seconded. Are you ready to vote? All in favor of amending that first? 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed?
I have no integrity.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That fails 4-10, so we're back to the motion of accepting the instrument as an...
Do we have a 10-minute caucus?
Did you guys have a...
Well, I had Martha's hand first. I didn't... Martha. Martha Robertson has the floor.
You are a sick man.
Martha has the floor. We have one more question to resolve, and we have to go to executive session.
Are you texting, Frank?
I learned how.
Martha.
It's taken us this many, all this time to evaluate our direct, to even start evaluating our direct reports. If we think we're going to, revise the thing and then do it again, we should get this right the first time. I would like to ask that the committee. I'd like to ask that the committee responsible for this work on the language that can be brought to us, and I'm pretty sure we can get it in there before this actually happens.
Yeah, I mean, if we adopt the tool now, that there's nothing preventing us from
having a process to amend it. Absolutely. Right. I saw Dooley's hand.
I'm willing to do that.
We can evaluate.
Okay. So are we ready to adopt the instrument now?
Yes.
All in favor of doing so? Are there any opposed?
Madonna.
That's unanimous. Okay, the only other question for this evening before we go into executive session on negotiations is an initial review panel. There were 7 people who were willing to volunteer. I suspect there's at least one person who didn't respond who also is willing to volunteer, so I believe we would have 8. We could have...
Are the people who didn't respond here tonight?
2 out of 3.
Maybe they could answer that question now, so you have an
idea. I'm not going to put them on the spot. But
what's
I think
the initial sign.
What?
They know who didn't respond.
Well, I'm not going to ask them to respond at now whether they can or can't serve on a panel. So the question is, do we have one panel? I would recommend we not do all 4 with one panel right away. We would have to stage it. But if we have 2 panels of 4 people, we may be able to take on 2 people. We can figure that out. Suggestions, Kathy.
My suggestion is, because this is a pilot, because it's new, that we start out with a single panel. The reasons for that are that it's a best practice. It establishes equitable and fair and perceived uniformity across groups. We've discussed this in the past. I think that later on we could probably get this down to a science and would understand and be able to do more than one group. I know that there's considerable sentiment otherwise. I'm just saying it's a best practice. I think we should start out with one group.
Second.
Other discussion? Consistency versus broadening experience. I have Dooley, Carol, Martha.
These reviews have been delayed so long. Later in the year, whatever legislators are on a review panel are going to have a lot more of their time taken up by budget issues. Those are simple reasons. All of the legislators, in my opinion, should be familiar with how you do reviews and see how this tool that we're proposing to use works and be able to contribute to any modifications based on their experience reviewing. So for a collection of reasons, I think it's really important to have multiple panels. Ideally, 3-person panels, 4 of them would be great, but we don't have 12 legislators apparently volunteering to do it. So as many panels as you can get out of the number of people who agree to do it should be impaneled. And I think we need to do this sooner rather than later during this difficult budget year.
Okay, so difference of opinion there, Carol, and then Martha.
Yeah, I don't have overwhelmingly strong feelings about this, but I do have a sense that there's been enough discussion and that we really ought to, the next time we revisit how this is working, that it probably would maximize the input if each of us could have participated on at least one of these panels. I also feel that there are probably some of these people that I've worked more closely with and might have more, be able to give more input on than others. So just in terms of my own participation, that, you know, we might have.
Right. And I have Pam next. Oh, sorry, Martha, then Pam.
I think we could combine getting it done quicker and spreading the experience with consistency. If, let's say, that there are panels of four and there are two people who are on all the panels, for example, maybe the chair and the chair or vice chair of the relevant committee, let's say, would be on all the panels. So you've got some overlap, but you give more people a chance to participate.
Okay. Pam, then Tyke.
Well, I guess I would like to take the middle ground, which is I think that having four separate panels is too much. I think that having two panels, doing two, makes sense because it would give them more than one experience with more than one evaluation, but it wouldn't be an enormous burden, which I think having one panel would be.
And Tyke.
I just wanted to congratulate Joe for going first and have fun. That's all I had to say.
Okay. There was lots of consensus about at least getting Joe started ASAP. All right. I guess we need to have a vote on this. We have a difference of opinion about one panel having for consistency. I think we do have agreement on Joe going first, but let's see if we have a second panel.
How are you going to do
this? Good question.
Motion
on the table, Kathy says, is for a single panel. Duly.
In the survey that you took, how many people responded that there should be more than one?
We did not ask the question.
No, but people put in comments. How many people made that comment? You didn't say how many times.
I think two or three.
That comment appeared.
You put yours in twice.
No.
Yeah, you put it in twice.
Well, I made the comment, and I don't see it here.
Yes, I noticed that when I just passed it out. I think there was two or three total who answered that question and said, I believe there should be panels or more than one.
Well, I put it, maybe mine is on the question number three. We should appoint four teams and do them all the same.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor for one panel to get us started. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of one panel to get us started of four people?
No.
One, two. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Nathan, was your hand up or not?
Yeah, it was up.
That's 10. Opposed.
This is one panel Joe.
One panel for Joe.
This is one panel for Joe.
We didn't say Joe yet, but we assume it's Joe because they don't.
Hold on. Wait a minute.
It's one panel. The vote was one panel. That's all the vote was.
No,
we didn't say
Mike,
who.
It's very confusing. You said one panel to get us started suggests that the subsequent evaluations may or may not be done by the same panel.
The vote was, I didn't imply anything about the one panel, whether it's one person or all four. I just said one panel.
Well, that's not a clear enough thing to vote on.
The whole issue is one panel for all four or something else.
Michael, I would like to move one panel for all four.
Wait a second.
Mike Hattery.
Whether it was appropriate or not, Kathy kind of laid out that she thought it would be a good idea for consistency the first time around. Correct me if I'm wrong.
And you seconded.
To use one panel for all four. Mm-hmm. Didn't you?
That's what I'm after.
And I seconded.
And you seconded, and that's what we're voting on.
That's what I thought we were voting on.
I think not everybody understood that, so maybe we should.
Right.
Surprise.
So okay.
Recall the question.
So vote again.
If you vote
that has been clarified. One panel to be empowered. That's a proposal on the floor for all four direct reports.
Clarification, how many people would be in that panel?
We haven't decided yet. There's 7 volunteers. It could be a large panel.
I would not volunteer to be on a panel with those all 4 people. That takes too much time. I couldn't do that. So my answer to one question depends on the decision on the other question. Well, don't have me for a panel.
Okay.
I'm not one of the 7.
All right.
It would be all 4.
Okay. Are you ready to vote on the motion on the floor, not knowing who would be on that panel? All in favor of that motion, one panel doing all 4 direct reports. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That passes 9-5. Okay, we've resolved the 2 main questions. The subsequent question that just came up is who should be on the panel? Paula recommended certain committee chairs in this whole orientation process. That recommendation started when there was a distinction between GO and HR. They have now been combined. But I believe the right recommendation was chair of the legislature, chair of those 2 committees, and was it possibly chair of budget and minority representation? So was it 5? Now they've been combined, so it would be 4. That's just the
recommendation.
4 people. That would be the recommendation that came to us.
Just repeat who you're saying?
The original recommendation from Paula, if I remember correctly, this is last fall, before any orientation happened, was 5 people. Chair of the legislature, chair of GO, chair of HR, chair of budget, and a representative with a minority perspective. Nathan.
Can I change that to be the choice of the committee for so instead of just
chair or designee,
it's just the designee of the
assuming someone is willing to serve. I think that's fine. That would be the proposal that came from Paul. We do not have to take that up. We could do
budget.
Do you want to move forward with that?
I'll move that.
That would be essentially 4 people at this juncture, because it would be 3 committee chairs, 2 committee chairs, chair of the legislature, and someone representing a minority perspective. Pam?
I have a concern that that is a too small a committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that...
Do you want to add?
At least...
Do you want to amend the motion? It's on the floor.
Okay. I would amend
it's
that...
It's presently 4. You want to say 5 or 6?
It should be an odd number.
Yeah. 5.
Okay.
It's friendly.
That's friendly. Is it friendly to Mike Sigler? So 5, and the 5th one would be an at-large kind of. We would maybe have to decide at our next meeting.
One of the people voted for having one committee.
Okay. That has been friendly, so that's a new motion on the floor. Thank you for taking this extra time. Martha.
By minority, do you mean political party minority?
No. Racial or ethnic minority. I believe that was the... You're right.
It would have been all one party.
A political minority, yes. I'm sorry. That was last fall.
So the clarification is political party?
Political. Yes. Yes.
Okay, wait, so list the people again. Chair?
The motion on the floor is now 5 people. It would be chair. Chair of the GPWR committee or designee, chair of budget or designee, a representative from the Republican Party, whoever they choose, if they choose someone, and then there would be an at-large seat, essentially, that we would, I guess, all choose.
I was just curious, why was the chair of the budget included in this? It seems an odd thing for the budget person.
Several of the positions report have a lot of responsibility relating to that committee. David Squires, county administrator, and Jonathan Wood, not necessarily as much, but. So the 5th position would be at large, Dooley Kiefer.
So were those positions, the people who hold those positions among the people who volunteered?
Not necessarily in Nathan's case.
So this is
but that's why Nathan, I think, may have suggested
that's right, that's
that
right.
A designee
yes.
would be,
that'd just
be open to that.
And did you vote for the one committee?
Huh? I voted for the one committee.
All right, are we ready to vote on a five-member panel with that composition?
How does the at-large person get voted?
We would have to have a subsequent vote, I guess.
We'll draw straws.
Of this legislature. We would determine who is available and willing. And so it's a five-member committee, and at a subsequent meeting or a subsequent gathering, we would, maybe by email or something, I'm not quite sure, we would decide the fifth at-large member. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of a five-person committee in that constellation?
I'm sorry, I missed the vote.
The five-member committee with that constellation as we just described. One, two, three. And opposed. That passes with one opposed. Thank you. I think we're done with that business. I would entertain a motion to go into executive session. Jim Dennis, seconded by Mike Hattery. All in favor? This is for negotiations. Are there any opposed? We will shut down the cameras. Thank you very much. It is 9:05. We do not anticipate any action. It should be a brief session, and we don't anticipate any action coming out of that executive session. Thank you very much.
I don't know.